Kentuckyan. I am the creepy Kentuckyan.
And I'm a baby.
And welcome to another edition of the Dead Pit Horror Talk Radio Show.
Now, Dead Pit Horror Flower Hour.
That's right. We have a lot of creamy horror goodness to get to this week. We have the interview with Sean Clark, who is involved in a ton of things in the horror business.
More importantly than that, has some of the funniest damn stories you'll ever get to hear about conventions and people involved in the horror business.
Yeah, we're going to play some of the interview we did with him a little bit later. And we also have some news, as we do every week. We're going to mention that. We have DVD reviews.
That's right.
Uncle Bill.
We've only got four this week, which is keeping with our theme.
That's right. An interesting little movie that a lot of people have been talking about. This one is our very first screener from Unearthed Films.
It's also the very first animated horror film I think we've ever seen.
And this one is City of Rot, which was directed, made entirely by Frank Sadal. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later.
And we're going to talk about the much hyped and much anticipated Old Boy, which is a film we got from Tartan recently.
Yeah, it's another one of Chan Woo Park's Vengeance trilogy.
Yeah. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy, and then Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
Or just Lady Vengeance. Yeah. And we go from the Asia stuff to the French lands, and this one is Calvaire, a.k.a. The Ordeal, which a lot of people were talking about, too. It's another one a lot of folks are talking about. This one's directed by Fabrice Duwels. He's a Frenchman.
And finally, a good friend of the show, Dante Tomaselli's Satan's Playground, which has been waiting for that to come out for a long time.
Yeah, a bunch of good DVDs we're going to review this week, and we'll get to that in a little bit. And we also want to remind everybody
that this weekend,
that's right, we'll be there tomorrow night and all day Sunday.
The Fright Night Film Festival, which is being held in Louisville, Kentucky. For those of you who don't know or haven't been on the site in a while, they moved the location. It used to be at the Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which was a huge supposedly haunted sanatorium. But now they moved it to the close to the airport,
Holiday Inn Airport Convention Center.
And if you want information on the directions and who's going to be there and anything else, just go to FrightNightFilmFest.com.
That's right. If you're coming in from out of town like us, the actual airport convention center has a really great deal. Just tell them you're going to be checking out the Fright Night Film Fest. And I think they have a rate of about $69 a night on a hotel room. And that's a really damn nice hotel, too. I've seen pictures of it online and stuff. So it's a pretty good deal.
I think you give them like FNF code or something.
Yeah, or just call them and tell them, you're coming to the convention. And it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. I know there's a lot of movies. I don't know if we'll check out any movies because we've seen a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of Chris Seaver movies are going to be there. Three Roth Kaniski movies.
Some Scotty Goldberg movies are going to be there.
A good friend, Ashless, his movie is going to
be. He's going to debut at that, I think.
So, it's a ton of stuff. And you're going to have a little mini Texas Chainsaw reunion with Leatherface.
Grandpa.
Gunnar Hansen and John Dugan, respectively. You also have Joe Bob Briggs is going to be there.
Another Texan.
Yeah. Heidi Martinuzzi is going to be there, and I think she's from California. Mm-hmm. But, a lot of independent people are going to be there. Tim Ritter, George Bonilla.
Yeah. Fast George Bonilla.
It's going to be fun. And we'll be reviewing some of his movies, too. We've got some of his movies. And
I actually got a couple of Tim Ritter's movies, but.
Yeah. I don't know when we'll get to those because that's stuff that we've had.
Yeah, we actually bought this shit ourselves.
Yeah. Well, not really. But that's going to be great. And we actually are going to have a table there. I don't know if we've said.
I think we've told, but we've got the whole works, folks.
We got.
I know we got flyers.
We got
a banner.
Banner.
I know we possibly got t-shirts. I'm not going to make any promises.
Hopefully we're going to have the t-shirts by then to sell.
And Tim Gross, who was our guest on the last Horror Roundtable, and who also did Gross Movie Reviews Volume 1, will be there on Sunday to sell his book as well.
That's right. So stop on by and tell us you're from the show. You listen to the show, and, we'll thank you, and,
send you along your merry way, because we're not giving you anything.
We don't have anything to give away, really.
If we had something to give away, we would, but we
We'll give you some flyers.
I'll give yeah, we'll give you some flyers and some advice.
That's right. And we'll talk horror.
That is one thing about this, though, that we really are being serious about. If anybody wants to come to this that lives around surrounding areas of Louisville and just talk about anything that has to do with horror or just bullshit about the show, you know, we'll be happy to do that.
That's right. So, anyway, that's this weekend. Hopefully, they'll do it every year from now on. So
I guess we should go ahead and just get started with the news section of the show.
Yeah. And the big thing that broke last week, actually, the day right after we did the show, was the Diary of the Dead news that the Hollywood Reporter originally reported on, that George Romero will bring his zombies back once again in Diary of the Dead, an independent project which he will write and direct. The movie will go back to the rough edge style of the original Night of the Living Dead with echoes of another grassroots hit, The Blair Witch Project.
I know so many people on the board are thrilled about that.
Yeah. Here's a little synopsis of what we have so far. Following a group of college students making a horror movie who find themselves in the midst of a real undead plague and begin filming the mayhem around them, Romero and his production partner Peter Grunewald will produce Diary of the Dead with Artfire Films. And if this actually happens, you know, I'll be very eager to see it because it's independent. You know, he's not doing it with a major studio.
If I, you know, if I could pick one major horror director that I thought would actually do an independent, you know, style horror film with a budget and stuff like that, it would be Romero because he hates studios so much. But I just can't see this happening. I know that we've talked
about evidently, well, from what they say, it is going to happen. They're going to begin filming on October the 11th in Toronto. Yeah. And Romero is also attached to
The Japanese remake.
Yeah, the Solitary Owl movie. Mm-hmm. So he's supposedly got a lot of things in the works. I just hope some of this actually comes
to fruition.
Yeah.
That would be nice. But if any of you are interested in this, like I was and am still, there is actually a review of Romero's script for the movie up on a site called Flixens.com. So they actually got a hold of the script, and they actually there's according to this there's some spoilers in it, you know, from the review. But you know, it's probably the first look at the script and anything that has to do with the movie. So
and since the script is finished, you know, it might have a better chance of getting made because as I remember, the Diamond Dead script was never finished.
Yeah, that's true.
And
that was just a bad idea in progress, but. Yeah. But we'll see how it comes along. I don't know. Romero is very notorious, though, for dropping projects.
Yeah.
I think he's done that at least
10
times.
If this is an independent, who knows? I mean, it could actually happen. Yeah.
But we'll hold out hope because I would actually like to see another Dead movie. And then another, like, one of the big news stories I thought for the week is Don May Jr., who's head over Synapse Films, recently acquired most of the original film negatives from Halloween, the original Halloween. Now, most of this stuff was getting ready to be destroyed because they apparently make space for new films that come in by destroying the old films that are
That's
in boxes.
Yeah.
So, the guy actually got his hand on pretty much the entire films, plus, entire film itself, plus, he called the editor Tommy Lee Wallace, and hopefully there will be some individual shots that were not included in the original film, were not released by Anchor Bay. Some of the stuff that was shot for the television version of the film is in there, apparently.
Mm-hmm. All possibly, this stuff, possibly in the original ending.
Yeah, the original. Too. And some of the alternate takes that Carpenter never used.
Yeah.
And there's just all kinds of different stuff. And right now he's working with Tommy Lee Wallace, who was, like I said, the editor of the film, to try to get some of this stuff restored. And eventually I guess they're going to try to put it out on some kind of huge DVD.
Yeah. Also, though, another Synapse-related news, Christmas Evil, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This one will be released on November 14th, so anybody who wants to watch it around the Christmas holiday season can, and I'm hoping that we'll get to watch it because I really remember loving this movie when I was a kid.
Didn't Troma have that out at one time?
Yeah, Troma had the original release out, but Synapse, you know, they They actually do remaster stuff, unlike Troma.
I don't think Troma knows what remastering is. I don't think they know what mastering means.
Yeah. They mentioned, though, that they're actually going to have a commentary track with director Lewis Jackson and a bonus commentary track with him and John Waters, which is really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Don May Jr., though, in an interview, said that it's one of John Waters' favorite holiday films, and he was all over doing the commentary. And also, the director, Lewis, found a bunch of old videotaped auditions by actors who came in various parts, and he mentioned that Michael Beck of the Warriors came in to try out, as well as Kathleen Turner.
I don't know if anybody's seen Kathleen Turner lately, but...
Yeah, she looks like a beast.
That's not something you want walking in on you.
Yeah, I bet she fucks like a beast, too.
Yeah. I can feel her love.
He mentioned, though, the footage is in very old format, and the problem is that it's now obsolete. So they're trying to find a facility that's capable of playing those tapes. But it sounds interesting, and I definitely want to check this one out. Retail price will be $24.95. And that's November 14th. Also, I guess we could say that, you know, Synapse is another company that have recently shown interest in the Dead Pit show.
Yeah, they've added themselves to the massive empire that is Dead Pit Radio.
Yeah, and quite possibly we can have Don May Jr. on the show. We were offered that, and, you know, that'd be very interesting to talk to him about finding the big Halloween treasure trove of goodness.
Because, I'd really like to interview him, because as I sit here and I was reading over this some more, there are actual scenes in this film that, you know, bloopers and outtakes and scenes that alternate scenes that were never used. Scenes with, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis fucking up lines and scenes with Kyle Richards fucking up lines.
Yeah, I think it'd be very interesting. All that, probably. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a box set of all Halloween stuff from that.
Yeah, but I'm amazed at that. But, yeah, we may have Don May Jr. very soon on the show.
Yeah, at some point. Probably not very soon, because we've got...
Well, very soon by our standards means it's like a couple months. I mean, we don't work very fast around here.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I think that'd be interesting. People can let us know if they'd like to hear him, too. Got news on Showtime's Masters of Horror Season 2. Okay. And they got a couple of guest stars already listed. Now, Jason Priestley, whose idea was it to get him?
Is he going to get killed? Because I don't see that.
Elliot Gould and Christopher Lloyd are all right. Going to be there. Jason Priestley and Elliot Gould will be in the episode of The Screwfly Solution, which was first... You know, if you wanted to go back and hear when Joe Dante first broke the news, it was a scoop.
It was. It was one of the. It was one of the many Dead Pit scoops.
Yeah, but we don't give a shit. So, you know, a Blues customer, somebody thought they scooped it 3 months later. That was the name of it. The Screwfly Solution is about a deadly virus that transforms men into psychotic killers. And Christopher Lloyd co-stars in the episode "Valerie on the Stairs," which centers on an aspiring novelist played by Tyrone Litzo, who is visited by a muse-like creature with dark powers. Masters of Horror creator Mick Garris is directing that episode, and it's based on a Clive Barker story. So you can check that out.
I know they did add, didn't they add Peter Medak, or
yeah,
the
Peter.
Guy that directed The Shangling?
Yeah. And he is actually going to direct The Washingtons, written by Richard Schizmeyer and Jonathan Schrech.
Did you say Richard Schizmeyer?
Yeah.
Okay.
The episode based on a short story by Bentley Little is a horrific tale of patriotism, history, and cannibalism.
Now, another thing, too, another person they add on there that I thought was a pretty good choice, even though a lot of people give this guy shit, is Rob Schmidt, who did Wrong Turn.
That's right.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah, he's directing Right to Die, is the name of that one, written by John Esposito, which isn't related to Felicia Rose, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Which is a ghostly take on the right to life debate. Okay, the good Japanese director of something, I'm sure, you know, Kim or somebody would know, Norio Tsuruta. Is directing Dream Cruise. Get this, folks. This is surprising. Guess what this is?
What?
a Japanese ghost story.
You're shitting me. Does it have a little kid?
That's all it has.
Black circles under his eyes and a big
surprise,
screen.
Folks, another Japanese ghost story.
It's either got that in it or a little girl with like black hair that comes over her whole face. I don't know which. I guarantee that.
Tom Holland will be directing We All Scream for Ice Cream.
That's right. God, if you don't know who Tom Holland is, you're fucking stupid. He's got directed Fright Night and Child's Play.
Yeah. And it centers on a guy who must face his childhood fears in order to save his family as local children are mystically being turned against their parents.
I actually have been wanting to see something from him because I thought Friday Night was one of the best films of the 80s.
Lee Tergesen and William Forsythe star in this episode, which writer David J. Shaw adapted from John Ferris's short story. That's right, folks. Brad Anderson, another great up-and-coming director from Session 9, is directing Sounds Like, and it's a psychological thriller based on Mike O'Driscoll's short story about a man with extraordinary hearing who takes violent action to silence the horrific jangle in his head. And the biggest master of horror in the whole series, Ernest Dickerson.
Ernest Boom Boom Dickerson.
Yeah. Man, if you guys haven't seen Bones.
Or Demon Knight, I think he did that.
Now, those, yeah. I mean, that says master of horror, both of those movies. He's directing The V Word about the dire consequences of two teenage boys' decision to break into a mortuary. And Michael Ironside stars in that episode.
You mean Scanners Michael Ironside?
That's right, is written by Mick Garris. And we can all look forward to the second season, which premieres on October 27th, folks. And I'm looking forward to it.
Honest to God, I am too.
Even the Ernest Dickerson episode, probably the worst one, but who cares?
That's right. I mean, all the rest of those guys are amazing.
Yeah, so I guess we should take a break, though, before we go on, because we've rambled a lot on here. It's already about the 20-minute mark, folks.
What the hell's wrong with us? We only need like 3 news stories.
I don't know. We'll be back here in just a second on Deadpit.com. Attention all horror fans in the Midwestern United States.
It came from Lake Michigan.
Racine, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. This October 20th through 22nd, you can get to meet
Lloyd Kaufman,
Brink Stevens,
Fred Olen Ray,
Debbie Rochon,
Susie Lorraine,
Jason Paul Cullum,
Amy Lynn Best,
and Scott Goldberg. Join them along with other independent filmmakers for the
It Came From Lake Michigan
Film Festival, October 20th through 22nd, 2006. Go to itcamefromlakemichigan.com.
Welcome back here to Dead Pit Radio. I am Uncle Bill.
I am the creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
Here's some interesting stories about the Fuse Fangoria Chainsaw Awards. The first ever televised Fuse Fangoria Chainsaw Awards.
That's right.
Which will be held Sunday, October the 15th, at the Orpheum Theater in Los Angeles. Now, I could go on and on about all the shit that Fangoria
announced all the nominees.
But I am just going to go, we are going to go through the nominees and talk about what we think about that. Okay. So, the first set of nominees are Killer Movie, which is Best Horror Picture and Director. And the nominees are The Descent, Hostel, Wolf Creek, The Hills Have Eyes, and The Devil's Rejects. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think out of that? That's a pretty decent list, except for Hostel.
Yeah.
And I actually haven't seen Wolf Creek. So.
Okay, I think that Hostel will win, unfortunately. But I would like to see Devil's Rejects win because that's the best movie probably of the new millennium.
Yeah, I'd like to see it win too, but I don't know. Probably won't. Okay.
What do you think will win?
Out of that list, Hostel. Most definitely.
Yeah, it will win.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's Eli.
Most Thrilling Killing, which is Best Death Scene. Final Destination 3, it says Drive Through, Hostel, Train Suicide, you gotta be kidding me. The Omen, Decapitation, Snakes on a Plane, Guy Attacked in Toilets, and Saw 2, Arm Stuck in Box of Blades.
I'll vote for Final Destination 3, because there's the only movie in that that, well, I like Hostel alright, but that death scene wasn't that great. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't think any of the scenes in Hulse really moved me that much. And Saw 2, I didn't like that scene that they're talking about there that much either.
Yeah.
So I probably would pick, I'll probably pick Final Destination 3 too, although the Omen had a pretty good decapitation scene in it. Okay, Dude You Do Not Want to Mess With, which means hero. Samuel Jackson from Snakes on a Plane, Kong from King Kong, Nathan Fillion from Slither, Jay Hernandez from Hostel, or Scott Speedman from Underworld Evolution. You got to be shitting me. Underworld Evolution got on there?
Yeah. It was a bad year for horror, folks.
I like Nathan Fillion from Slither because I actually did like him. You know, he had some other roles in Firefly and a couple of sci-fi series.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll go with him, too, because you know, I hate Underworld and Hostel and haven't really seen Snakes on a Plane. I thought the King Kong remake was really bad.
Yeah, I couldn't get through the King Kong
remake. It's fucking way too long, man.
Okay,
look, Peter
Chick,
Jackson needs to get some sense.
Chick You Don't Want to Mess With, which is heroin. The Descent, Shauna McDonald, Anna Faris from Scary Movie 4, Rajah Mitchell from Silent Hill, Laura Linney from The Exorcism of Emily Rose, or Kate Beckinsale from Underworld Evolution. God damn it, there's not really much like choice there at all, is there?
I'll just vote for Anna Faris because she's fucking hot as hell.
Yeah, I like, I'll say,
I didn't really like Scary Movie 4, but shit, I could watch her in anything.
I'll say Kate Beckinsale because I hate those damn movies, but I just think she's hotter than hell.
Yeah.
But can they pick a couple of different people to put in that list?
Yeah.
I mean, what about Tiffany Shepis? I can think of that right off the top of my head.
They don't want to do that, though, because that's independent.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway. They even have an award for independence on here? I don't think they did.
I don't know. We'll get to
fucking
it.
Fucking assholes.
Okay, here we go. Relationship from Hell, Best Couple or Duo? The Devil's Rejects, Bill Moseley and Sherry Moon Zombie. Kate Beckinsale and Scott Speedman from Underworld Evolution. Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson from Hard Candy. Derek Richardson and John Velasque from Hostel. Michael Rooker and Elizabeth Banks from Slither. I'm definitely picking Mosley and Zombie for that.
Yeah, although they weren't really a couple. They're brother and sister, aren't they?
Yeah, it says best couple or duo. Okay. So I guess it's...
Yeah, I'll pick them too.
You gotta go with that. Bill Mosley was like great in that movie.
Yeah.
Overall. Okay, best villain. Tobin Bell from Saw 2, Sid Haig from Devil's Rejects, Robert Dick Joy from The Hills Have Eyes, Jean Velasque from Hostel, or Jean Jarrett from Wolf Creek.
Oh, I'd go with Haig.
I would too, yeah. Although Tobin Bell is really good in that role.
Yeah, but I mean, the movie sucked. He really can't help with that, but whatever.
But he is probably one of the better horror villains coming out. Creepiest Kid.
I know what that is.
Let's just not even read these. Yeah. The Omen. Seamus, Davy Fitzpatrick.
That's who's going to win.
If that fucking kid ain't Irish, there's something wrong, because that's the most Irish name I've ever heard.
And if that kid don't win, there's something wrong.
Yeah, just fuck the rest of them. Okay, highest body count. I don't even know. Are they trying to tell us they know the highest body count? Or that's all it says. King Kong, Snakes on a Plane, Final Destination 3, Slither.
Doom.
I don't even know what has the highest body count. Who cares?
How is Doom even a horror movie? It's a horrible movie.
Okay. Best one-liner. Lord. I've had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
That's been done to death.
Yeah, it really has. Hostel. I hope hospitality is legal in Amsterdam because that girl is a fucking hog. What the hell? Devil's Rejects. Boy, the next words out of your mouth better become some brilliant fucking Mark Twain shit, because it's definitely getting chiseled on your tombstone. I love that line, actually. And I would pick that one, even without reading the other one.
Of course, they've got one from old douchebag from Hostel.
Yeah, that's the one I read. Okay, bloodiest beatdown, best fight scene. Doom, The Rock versus Carl Urban. Haven't seen Doom, don't care to see it. Underworld Evolution, Kate Beckinsale versus Tony Curran, don't care. The Hills Have Eyes, Michael Bailey Smith versus Aaron Stanford. King Kong, Kong versus T-Rexes. The Descent, Juno and Sarah versus the Crawlers.
I do remember that being pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a good scene. Although you couldn't ever tell what the hell was going on in it because it moved so fast.
But they did look like they were beat to shit, I've got to say.
That's true. Okay. Best with Less. Here we go. Best limited release budget film. Zombie Honeymoon. The Dark Hours. Subject 2. You remember that?
No.
We actually saw that movie. Hard Candy.
Did we see that?
Uh-huh. And The Roost.
I don't know. I don't even remember Subject 2.
Yeah, I remember that movie. Out of those, though, I think that's the only one I've seen.
I haven't seen any of them. Well, if we've seen Subject 2, I forgot about it. So.
Yeah. Okay. Best effects, special effects. Silent Hill, King Kong, Snakes on a Plane, Final Destination 3, Tim Burton's Corpse. You
gotta
be
fucking
kidding
me. About
this is all fucking CG.
Yeah.
There ain't nothing special about that shit.
Snakes on a plane looks fucking ridiculous, and I think they meant for it to look
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Did. I mean, that was the whole point. But actually, they do have another category called special makeup effects,
okay.
Which is Slither, The Hills Have Eyes, Silent Hill, Underworld Evolution, and The Descent. How does Silent Hill and Underworld Evolution get into that? There's not any makeup effects in any one of those movies.
Well, I'll vote for Slither.
Yeah, I would too, out of those, definitely.
Makeup effects in Hills Have Eyes. I love K&B, but shit. You need to stop letting your freaking interns doing that shit.
The Pluto character in that looks like shit. There's no doubt. Okay, most disturbing import. Scariest foreign film. Pulse from, or Cairo from Japan. Night Watch from Russia. Calvary, which we're going to review on the show. Roma Santa, The Werewolf Hunt. Or Godzilla, Final Wars from Japan. The only one of those I've seen so far has been Calvary.
Yeah. So we really can't, I don't know. Yeah, well, I know Pulse is like a big thing right now, the Japanese version.
And this next one's easy. Best TV show, anthology, or film, Masters of Horror.
There's nothing, yeah. You can't really even, I've never even heard of like a couple of those.
Hey, what in the hell is this shit? Killer Video, Best Music Video.
Yeah.
And it's got Kanye West in there. Bulls, fuck that shit. I'm not even going to. Video inspired by a film, Best Music Video.
Who cares? Why can't you have some more independent fucking awards or something?
This is funny as hell. Prince of Darkness, darkest male artist in music video. It's got the dude from My Chemical Romance in it. Let's just stop there because I think that must be really.
Near shit like that, I'm fucking like try to squeeze a turd out or something.
I can't believe that anyway. But
yeah, but. I am looking forward to like the award show, but I know that it'll be fucking bullshit.
Yeah, it will. It'll be a big fuck fest.
Eli Roth will be up there accepting like four awards or something.
Yeah.
I'd really like to thank you guys.
I'd like to thank my hairstylist for giving me all the mousse I needed to make it through. But anyway, yeah, if you want to check that out, it's fuse.tv, and you can go on there and check out the sites.
That's right.
Go to Fangoria. I'm sure they got something up there too.
That's right. By God. Okay. Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher Film. Okay, we talked about that a few months back, as I remember. And it's based on the book by Adam Rockoff. The documentary is going to make its premiere on October the 13th, which is another very special night for us.
Did you say October the 13th?
Friday, October the 13th. Yep. And we'll be talking about that in the upcoming shows, of course. But that's going to be at 9 p.m. Going to Pieces provides a comprehensive look at the importance, prominence, and newfound legitimacy of the horror film genre, specifically slasher films, which is one of our favorite subgenres, at least. Now, they've announced some of the movies that they're going to be talking about, as well as some of the people that are going to be interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
You have people like Wes Craven, John Carpenter, Rob Zombie, Tom Savini, Stan Winston, Joseph Stefano, who actually recently died.
Yeah, he was the writer of Psycho, wasn't he?
And Betsy Palmer. And the movies, they're actually going through a lot of really, really great slasher movies. One of our favorites, Alice, Sweet Alice.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about that, I was really surprised. A Nightmare on Elm Street, along with its sequels, Part 3, 4, and 5, seems like they stuck with the... Well,
some of these movies you just can't believe they would even talk about, but it's amazing.
Yeah, April Fool's Day, Bay of Blood, Black Christmas, Boogeyman, Curtains, Cutting Class, Freddy vs. Jason, Friday the 13th, 1 through 5, then Part 8.
How the hell they leave out Part 7?
They left out Part 6, 7, yeah. Jason Goes to Hell, and Jason X, and... Yeah. Girls Night Out, Graduation Day, Halloween Unmasked. What the hell is that?
I don't have any idea.
Happy Birthday to Me. He Knows You're Alone. Hostel. All
right.
House of Thousand Corpses. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mad Man. Beware the Madman Balls. Love that.
Maniac,
yeah. My Bloody Valentine, which is my favorite Canadian slasher. It is.
In for a fucking treat soon.
Night School. Pieces. Prom Night, Psycho, Return to Horror High,
George Clooney,
Saw, Scream 1, Scream 2, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Sleepaway Camp, Slumber Party Massacre, Student Bodies, Terror Train, Texas Chainsaw Massacre Remake, Texas Chainsaw Massacre The Next Generation, The Burning, The Devil's Rejects, The Final Tear, and The Prowler. Knock, knock, motherfucker.
Knock, motherfucker. The Prowler.
So that's great, boys. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's actually a documentary we've been waiting for a long time.
Yeah, I'm getting
time.
My DVD recorder.
Mm-hmm.
I want to record that son of a bitch.
I'm going to set that motherfucker up and record it, by gad.
It's going to be a big weekend, folks, that weekend.
It really is. And by the way, for all those categories that I just mentioned, I would like for people that are on the message board listening to the show to start up a couple polls about who you think should win in each one of those categories we mentioned for the Chainsaw Awards. Just so I can see, you know, what kind of people we got on the message board. Because I know a lot of new people came in.
Yeah, man. Seems like every day a couple people join that board now for some reason.
Yeah, so we got a lot of new people. We just want to see where you stand about, you know, your preferences in horror films.
That's right.
So that would be a good start right there. So also, there's been a project shopped around for a long time called My Name is Bruce. It's the Bruce Campbell's new film, which is basically starring him, and it's about him as a B-movie film actor.
Yeah.
Who gets caught in a town where they don't really know that he's an actor. Well, the shooting is wrapped on the new film, and supposedly it should be released sometime by next spring.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that, just to see what he's playing Ash in the movie, right?
Yeah. It should be really interesting to see where he goes with that.
One thing it's not really anything I have written down, I just thought of it. Is the big thing that Blood Disgusting is posting about vegan zombie for the Day of the Dead movie.
Look, okay, we understand that you like to get scoops and, you know, you like to make stories up and shit to get people to come to your site. I know that's a big thing that they like to do over there. Yeah. But, seriously, if anybody believes that shit is true, you're fucking retarded. I can't even say anything else. Here's the scoop,
you've
okay?
You've got a problem.
They're saying that the Bub character in a new Day of the Dead film will have been a vegetarian before he died, and that's the reason why he won't eat any people, when he turns into a zombie.
You know what this sounds like to me? This sounds like to me that the guy that put that in there is just sort of a joke. See how many fucking motherfuckers believe it.
It's so fucking
ridiculous.
I know Hollywood is like all shitty about storylines and stuff, but they're not even that fucking stupid.
No.
There's no way. So no. Just forget about that silly shit.
I can't believe the people on the message board actually believe it, too. There's people on our board that was talking about that.
This stupid motherfuckers in Hollywood. No, I'm sorry, folks, but even Hollywood draws a line somewhere, and apparently Blood Disgusting doesn't. So.
Yeah.
But here's some more information about the new Kevin Smith horror film. He says, I was going to do the Green Hornet movie, but I'm going to make a horror film instead. I'm really looking forward to it because over the past 12 years, I've done 7 variations on comic themes, which is actually true. And it will be great to do something that is just complete left turn. He's pretty tight-lipped about the actual feature. But here's the weird thing, too, that I thought about this story. He said that he was approached to do commentary for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 Special right. Edition. He said, yeah, that's true. I was supposed to do a commentary track, and then I was doing all the press for Clerks 2, and it just didn't happen. But apparently he's a huge Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 fan.
Hmm.
Which is kind of odd.
That's weird. Yeah. We got news from our good friend Robert Kurtzman, and this is concerning The Rage, which we actually talked to him about back in January, February. I get the months mixed up. The Rage will make its debut at the next East Coast edition of Fangoria's Weekend of Horror,
mm-hmm.
presented by Anchor Bay Entertainment. And it will be held September 29th through October 1st at the Meadowlands Crown Plaza Hotel in Secaucus, New Jersey. But this is killer. They're actually going to have a panel as well, I believe, with Misty Monday, Robert Kurtzman, and isn't Andrew Devol going to be there as well? Mm-hmm. So definitely check that out. You know, we're looking forward to it, and we possibly will have some people from the movie at some point to talk about the film and other stuff.
I just want to mention two things really quick. One that I think is hilarious, and the other one that I think is pretty informative. Addicted, not me particularly, but Sarah Michelle Gellar has signed on to do a film called Addicted, and you'll never guess what it is, by the way.
See.
It's a South Korean remake of a film called Jadok, which is about a woman whose husband and brother-in-law end up in comas after a horrible accident, When the brother-in-law wakes up, he says he's her true husband. Look, what the hell's wrong with Sarah Michelle Gellar? Why in the hell is she taking, like, every one of these Japanese or Asian horror remakes that come out? Is that the only thing she thinks she can do now?
I think that she knows that she's not really that good of an actress.
Yeah, she pretty much does know
that. She pretty much has to do stuff like that. And I think she has to follow that same crowd that likes the Buffy stuff and all that crap.
I just can't, for life of me, figure out what in the hell, why anybody would think she was an actress anyway. Because the only thing she does is like walk around looking like she's taking a crap or worried all the time. I mean, that's really what she looks like. But, and one other thing that I want to talk about, which I thought would be pretty good, would be the Shriek Fest, which we're actually supposed to take part in eventually, I hope, have announced that they're going to actually world premiere a couple movies, and I want to just go through those real quick. Richard Brandis, Penny Dreadful, which stars Mimi Rogers from Ginger Snaps, and Michael Berryman, and Point of Contact, which is a ghost story about a medium confronting terrifying paranormal phenomena. The Bombardier, which is apparently a World War II movie. Final Run by Kenneth Foley. John Gorman's Contorted Hazel. Clea Frost's The Window. Dustin Murphy's Repossessed. Harvey Jordan's The Waiting Room. And some douchebags from Saw doing something about Itsy Bitsy, I believe.
Tons of, you know, Saw producing goodness or whatever.
Yeah. But that's the Shriek Fest horror film premieres. And we're actually supposed to review and judge some of the Shriek Fest films. We haven't heard anything from that for a long time.
I'm not asking anyway. It's all the damn reviews.
Yeah, that's all we do for like the next month, probably, if we had to do it.
Okay. One screening I have to talk about, Metropolitan NYC, the original Wicker Man from 1974.
Amazingly that you should say that, because I just watched that movie like a week ago. They're selling it down at Walmart now, by the way, for like $9. It's the Anchor Bay version of it.
Yeah, is it?
That movie is fucking like bizarre. Disturbing. Even for like stuff that shouldn't, it's not got any gore in it whatsoever, but it's just disturbing. Yeah, I encourage people to check that out.
That was really, really bizarre. Is what I always heard.
Yeah, it
anyway,
is.
Free admission with one drink minimum. Go check them out, metropolenyc.com.
And I guess I'm going to talk about the DVD releases for next week, which is September the 5th. You got the Bela Lugosi box, which includes 15 frightful films and a 5-disc set from Passport.
Oh, okay.
You got the complete Toxic Avenger.
That's
right. 7-disc set from Troma.
Which, good pals at Troma.
Yeah. You got the mandatory Lionsgate film, The Feeding. You got The Evolved, which is from Troma too, which I didn't even know about. Imagine that.
I don't know about that.
You got The Gojira, Godzilla King of the Monsters 2-disc set that we mentioned before.
Yeah.
You've got Legend of Lucky Keys from MTI, which we'll probably actually get. 100 Years of Horror, which I actually heard was pretty good, which is a 5-disc set. It's like a documentary-style one. Got The Plague from Sony, Shockerama, which we reviewed on here, which, by the way, don't
buy. You may want to check that out. I don't know.
I'm telling you, don't. Okay, Supernatural, the complete first season.
What the hell's that?
I don't even know. Tales of Voodoo box set from Video Asia. You mean there's another Asian company besides Tartan?
Yeah. That Asian stuff's real popular.
Okay.
You know something I wish they would release, like, seasons of? Do you remember, though, that those old shows they used to show really late at night called, I think it was called Sightings?
Yeah, the UFO show.
I used to love that shit.
Yeah.
They don't release stuff that I actually want to see. No, all this bullshit, Erie, Indiana, the complete first season and all that crap.
We want to talk about shit that they don't release, and don't even get into this, but the Tales from the Dark Side series. Why in the hell don't they ever release that?
I have no idea. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, though, I guess it's time to go on to the interview. We've rambled on plenty enough.
And there'll be some more rambling going on here in a minute.
Yeah, this will probably be a 2.5-hour show, if I was guessing. Sean Clark, you'll learn all about him if you don't know who he is. You'll hear a lot of stuff that went on behind the scenes, the making of the Halloween 25 Years of Terror DVD. In case you don't know, he was one of the three principals that started the convention and the DVD, what eventually became the DVD. So anyway.
Yeah, we encourage everybody to check out DreadCentral.com, which is where he basically resides now. And he'll tell you, you know, there's some more horror's hallowed grounds.
Yeah, you can read all the articles that he did. on Dread Central, mm-hmm. or go to horrorshollowgrounds.com. And
you know, just check out the interview for a couple of the stories. I know that most horror fans will love these stories.
The Friday the 13th fans will probably really get a kick out of one of these stories.
So Scam anyway, boy, pay attention.
So anyway, here we are, Sean Clark here on DeadPit.com. At what age did you get into the horror movies?
God, as far back as I can remember. My parents are really young. They had me when I was, I think my mom was 17 and my dad was 18. Mm-hmm. So they were really hip parents, so they were always going to horror movies and stuff. And I actually saw The Exorcist in the theater when I was 4 years old.
Oh, God.
And I remember it. And I remember very vividly going to see Jaws when I was 5.
Huh.
And it seemed very normal for me because they were always taking me to horror movies. So it never really seemed all that odd. And I enjoyed them. You know, some of them scared the shit out of me, you know.
Yeah.
When I got into my teens, they kind of mellowed out on the horror films. And at that point, they were, you know, always taking me and my friends and buying us the tickets and letting us go, you know. So I didn't have parents that tried to hold me back from that, you know. It was like whenever there was a new Friday the 13th or a new Halloween or whatever it was, they were there buying me the tickets, getting me in and picking me up 2 hours later, you know.
Yeah.
But, I was lucky I had cool parents. So it's something I've always been into and a hobby that turned into, I guess, sort of a bit of a career.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what were some of the movies that really, really got you hooked, though?
Well, Jaws was definitely a big one. Halloween, Friday the 13th, Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Those, you know, Dawn of the Dead was huge for me. When I saw Dawn of the Dead, I mean, I was just like, oh my God, I fell in love with that movie.
Yeah.
Those were probably the ones I was like a big fan of at first, you know, and I started buying Fangoria like right when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit after the famous Monsters generation, although, you know, I picked up back issues as I got more into it. But, you know, Fangoria was more my era. I was born in the 70s. So, I remember buying issue number 9, the infamous issue number 9, you know, when it was brand new. Always been a big fan.
So how did it go from being like a fan thing to actual career?
Well, it's really kind of strange. There's so many different facets that go into how I kind of got to where I'm at. I mean, I started going to conventions. I think the first Fangoria convention I went to was in 89. And I'm somebody who's not a real fanboy geek, you know, like celebrities, you know, feel like, oh shit, you know, this guy. You know, I don't get starstruck. I'm very personable. And I just, you know, strike up conversations with a lot of the celebrities and actually became friends with quite a few of them. I mean, it was really bizarre. I mean, I remember the first guy I got really tight with was Reggie Bannister.
Yeah.
And Reggie Bannister and Clive Barker I became friends with. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, I was hanging out at Reggie's house. I hung out with Reggie, but like Clive was more of a, we just knew each other, and, you know, he'd invite me to premieres, and he'd let me be an extra in Lord of Illusions, you know, invite me to the set, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it now, finding out later when I found out that he came out of the closet, there might have been ulterior motives, but he was a really cool guy, and I was like, when I thought back, I was like, gee, that was strange. He was so nice to me. But you know, with like Red, we became really good friends, and then once you kind of befriend a few of them, then they're like, oh, he knows Reg, oh, he knows Clive, and then they all start becoming your friends. Next thing I knew most of these guys who were my idols personally. Mm-hmm. And from that, I started doing other stuff, like I started a mask company back in, I think, 94, 95, and started selling masks on the internet. Soon after, started with a little ad in the back of Fangoria, and then that turned into this whole thing, because I was like the first guy to make an independent, like, Michael Myers mask and sell it on the internet.
Yeah.
And then it started this whole wave of independent mask makers, you know, this whole Myers, like, thing just took off, and everybody was doing it. And that built up to my company, Silver Champagne Novelties, to what it is now. And then from that, I did this Halloween convention in 2003 with a couple other guys. And, you know, we had no idea it was going to be as big as it ended up being. And it just blew up. And our whole goal when we originally sought out to do the convention was, you know, we figured, hey, why don't we document the convention, film the panels and stuff, and that way, you know, maybe we could sell a DVD of the convention, you know, just like a keepsake for the people that went, or maybe the fans that couldn't make it, you know, so they could experience the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can make a few bucks, you know, because
yeah.
We did the convention for charity. So we didn't make any money on the convention. It was all Children's Hospital. So what ended up happening is during that course of time, we became involved with the ACODS, who then decided with us, hey, why don't we take this documentary or make it into a documentary of the series, and just took it to another level, and then we worked on that for like 3 years, and it just came out like 3 weeks ago, Halloween 25 Years of Terror DVD.
We've both seen it, and it's a really great DVD.
Oh, thank you. It could have, you know, there's things I'm not totally happy with. There's things that definitely could have been better. I didn't have any say. I kind of got taken out of the loop in regards to what I cut out of the actual documentary itself.
Yeah.
Me and a few others aren't real happy about it, but I mean, overall, if you didn't know the background and you just watched the DVD, you know, as an outsider, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great documentary, but there's a lot of stuff that could have been better, a lot of stuff that should have been left in, a lot of stuff that probably should have been cut out, you know, that made it a little more of a fluff piece, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, the actual documentary aside, though, the extras disc with the panels and everything from the convention was amazing itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's full of stuff. I mean, you know, I was lucky that I was able to get my episode on there, the Horror Solid Ground thing. That was the big thing for me. Because, I mean, basically, in a nutshell, me and Anthony Massey, who's the webmaster of HollywoodMovies.com, had a falling out. He pretty much did everything in his power to cut me out of it. You might notice I'm hardly seen in the documentary anywhere. You also might notice in the panel discussions I moderate, the camera never goes back to me.
I did actually notice that.
Yeah, I did too.
Well, I mean, it's like those panels were shot with two cameras, you know, and it was purposely edited in a way that I was looked off camera as much as possible. So fortunately, I was able to cut a deal with Malik to get my episode on the DVD, which Tony was not happy at all about.
Yeah.
But, you know, it kind of, I basically, in my opinion, came up the victor, because it's like, well, you cut me out of the documentary and whatnot, but guess what? I got my own show on there, and I'm hosting it, so
yeah.
Screw you.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like...
You know, I mean, just take a look at the documentary. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and bag on the guy, but fans have pointed out on message boards, it's like, wait a second, why is this webmaster guy on the documentary so many times and Charles Cyphers and PJ Souls are nowhere to be found?
Yeah, we were actually talking about that on the show, where PJ is only like the narrator and she's not even in the documentary.
Exactly. Yeah. There were interviews filmed with all of them. In fact, Charles Cyphers, we had stuff with him. He went back to some of the locations. There was all kinds of Charles Cypher stuff, and he got cut out. And we don't know why.
Yeah.
But that's something you could ask Mr. Massey about.
So you have no idea why you were cut out either? Or
They tried to cut me out of the DVD deal when it went forward after the convention was over, and I ended up having to sue them.
Yeah. And weren't you the writer of the actual documentary?
Well, that's another thing I got screwed on. Basically, because we settled before the documentary was completed, mm-hmm. I had to agree to a set number of credits that were already set in stone. So I then ended up working on the documentary a lot after that point. But unfortunately, you know, even though I rightly should have been credited a lot more for things I did, I ended up only getting like two cheesy credits. when in reality, I'm the one who got Clive Barker. I'm the one who got Rob Zombie. I got Edgar Wright. I got Tommy Lee Wallace, the guy who played Little Buddy, Garn Stevens. I could go on. And I'm the one who actually conducted those interviews. When you see them talking, they're talking to me.
It's never really stated who it is doing the interviewing.
I didn't get credit for it. You know, and I'm pissed about it. But you know what? Bottom line is, my show is getting so much positive press that that's all I care about, really. You know.
We were curious about the horror hallowed ground segment because, from my understanding, you've been to a lot more locations, and it was supposed to be a TV series. Is it actually on somewhere that we don't know about, or?
Oh, I'll give you the story on that. Basically, what happened is I was working for the Horror Channel as a writer.
Yeah.
That's another thing I got into back in 2003. I started writing for CreatureCorner.com.
Yeah, this was a big story. I mean, there was a lot of
This could be a mini series.
Yeah.
So I was writing for Creature Corner, and the Horror Channel was this up and coming thing, and they wanted to get their name out there, and they wanted to establish themselves on the web. So they looked around the internet and they found what they felt was the most popular, best well written horror news site on the internet. And what they found was Creature Corner, and they basically bought us out, sort of. I don't think there was any actual money exchange, but they basically said, you know, we want Creature Corner. Well, Nick Anuncia, who runs Chud, he owned the name, and he wouldn't give it up. So we ended up, the entire writing staff from Creature Corner left and went to the Horror Channel, and we started what we called Dread Central. We wanted our own identity.
Yeah.
So fortunately, we did that, and we owned the domain name DreadCentral.com, and it established that Dread Central was the news section of the Horror Channel. We did that for a couple of years, working with them. And when I pitched them the idea of Horror Solid Grounds, which is something that I originally first did in 94 when I did this fan video called Halloween the Retrospective. I used to, like, give it away to fans on the internet and stuff like that. Basically, it was the same thing, but I said, yeah, I want to do an article version where I, like, take pictures of the locations, you know, show them as they are today compared to the movie and do a retrospective, and they loved it. And they immediately were saying, oh, this has to be a show. This has to be a show. And quickly, the article became the most popular thing on the Horror Channel website.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, okay, this definitely has to be a show. And it was going to be their first original program.
Yeah.
That was always the intent. Well, you know, 2 years later, you know, nothing was happening. And, you can only make excuses for so long. And although we believed in the concept, we believed in the idea, there didn't seem to be anything really happening with the channel.
Yeah.
And basically, one of the main guys in charge got let go, and he was kind of our go-to guy. And then the guy who was actually the CEO of the company took over, and then he just started running it into the ground. I mean, he basically started throwing down these stupid rules on us. Now, you got guys who have been working for you, establishing your website, working for free for
right.
2 years, and then you start throwing restrictions on them.
Yeah.
You know, then we're just like, fuck this. You know?
Yep.
And then I had the nerve to send out a blanket email to the entire staff saying that they were their funds had been depleted, and they can't make rent on their office, and if we would all pitch in.
Yeah.
And that's when we all said, let's fucking jump this thing. You know, yeah. They're asking us for money, and we're expecting them to get $58 million to launch a channel, and they need money for rent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's time to call it a day.
Yeah.
And then, as we were thinking of doing this, they fired one of our main guys, and we just said, okay, we're out of here, and we all resigned. And then we took Dread Central with us. That's where we are now, DreadCentral.com, and doing our thing, business as usual. Same writers, the entire staff came, and now look at the Horror Channel. You know, go to that site and see what's happening.
Yeah. I think it's a shame, though, that there can't be a Horror Channel.
The problem with it is, from my experience, is that there's, you know, to do a Horror Channel, you need cooperation with all the studios, you know, because you need to get their their slate. You know, you need to, you know, you need to get all the Universal films. You need to get Lionsgate films. And all these guys see a good idea, and they're trying to jump on it. You know, Universal's trying to do a horror channel. Comcast is trying to do one. Lionsgate's trying to do one. Then you got Monsters HD, who's actually been doing it, but they're just not, you know, all over the place. Their limited market right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's tough. It's tough to do. It seems like it'd be a no-brainer. There's a channel for everything. There's a fucking tennis channel, man.
A romance channel.
Yeah, exactly. It's like fucking badminton channel pretty soon or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that shit will get on before the horror channel does. It's, you know, it's sad, but that's the case. So now what the deal is with my episode, you know, there's been a lot of people saying, whoa, you know, when I bought the DVD, it says the horror channel at the beginning. Well, the story behind that, just to clear that up, is basically I came up with the idea at the 11th hour to pitch to Malik to do this show as a bonus feature on the DVD. It was something that just popped in my head. I was in his office one day, and we were talking about bonus features, and I said, hey, you know what? I got this show concept, blah, blah, blah. I pitched it to him, showed him this trailer I had made. He loved it. He said, dude, let's do it. He goes, but problem is you got 3 weeks. I need a finished product in 3 weeks. And I'm like, holy shit. So I really rushed it. I mean, I had to knock that fucker out quick. So I go back to the horror channel and I say, hey, look, here's the deal. I'm going to get an episode of my show, Horror Solid Grounds, on the Halloween 25 Years of Terror DVD, worldwide distribution, the biggest horror franchise in the world, Halloween. You know, nobody's bigger than Halloween. And they're going to put the horror channel's name on it. This is free advertising for you. All we have to do is give them an episode, and your name is all over the world for free. And they basically bitched about it. I had to fight with them about it.
Hmm.
And I asked them for money to film it. They wouldn't give me a penny, which in, you know, now is a great thing because now I'm total, you know, I totally own it. They didn't give me a penny. So I outfunded the episode myself. We shot it, we edited it, we gave it to them. I was really skeptical about even putting the horror channel's name on it. Wish I wouldn't have now, but nothing I can do about it because, you know, like 2 weeks after I turned it in to Anchor Bay, you know, we walked. So unfortunately that was on there, but right now I have a lot of interest in the show. There's a lot of cool things going on, and I'm kind of just weighing my options right now. Something's going to happen with it soon. There's some good things brewing.
So, about the episodes you already filmed, I'm guessing we'll probably never see those then, right?
Well, here's the thing. That's the only episode I've actually filmed.
Oh, really?
All that okay. stuff you see in the beginning
yeah.
is all footage I've shot over the years because I've been into this for forever. Every time I go to a location, I film stuff. But I need to actually go back to those locations to reshoot everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'll probably use some footage just like I did in the Halloween episode. You know, you'll see where I used old footage where I said this was back in 94. So I'll probably do some stuff like that. Like in the case of Session 9, if I do a Session 9 episode, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to use the footage I shot because they tore Danvers down recently.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to use that footage.
Have you ever thought about trying to do like a reenactment type of thing with the actual actors to really go back and, you know,
tell you about
something? Yeah, discuss the roles and the shots and such as that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what I did with PJ. I didn't ask her to say lines or anything, even though she kind of threw in several totallys in there. you know, I don't want to embarrass them and say, hey, you know, could you put on your Michael Myers mask? And
yeah,
say,
I would.
You know,
I would imagine.
They gotta have some dignity. But no, it's definitely my goal to always take as many people back with me as I could. Unfortunately, I wanted to have more people for the Halloween episode, but it basically came down to time. I had no time
yeah.
to do it. You know, like Brian Andrews wanted to go with me, you know, little Tommy Doyle, he wanted to go with me. I actually may go back and reshoot the elementary school stuff with him later, you know, for whenever I bring this out, wherever it ends up being. Because what's on that DVD is a cut version. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they said I needed to trim 8 minutes off of the episode. So there's a full-length 25-minute version, and the one that's on the DVD is 17 minutes. So there's a lot of stuff that got cut.
I know that you have a pretty big database of these locations. You could ever compile them into a book, maybe like a horror traveler's guide.
Yeah, you know what? That's something I want to do. I've had tons and tons of emails asking me to do that. But I figured, you know what, let's get the show out there first. Let's get a real strong fan base and following for the show, and then the book will sell itself, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's the goal. And and now, actually, have you guys heard of Horror Hound magazine?
Yeah.
Nate from Horror Hound, he hooked up with me, and he wants me to bring Horror's Hall of Grounds into his magazine as a feature article every issue.
That's cool.
So we're going to start doing that, I believe, in the next issue. You know, it's not going to be, obviously, quite as detailed as online articles are, but it'll definitely be something cool that fans, because a lot of people still aren't on the Internet, believe it or not, you know? Mm-hmm. Some people rely on magazines. So it'll be something cool that they can see, like, a much, I guess, condensed version of one of my pieces in his magazine. And then once they... they're just growing, and once they grow, so will the article.
I think there's an article on Dread Central with the Phantasm locations.
Yeah.
A lot of the areas, like, they seem to change a lot, but the Phantasm one, you know, it looked pretty much the same, surprisingly. A lot of the areas, like the mausoleum.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of them look the same. One of them, an article I'm working on right now, I'm working on a Return of the Living Dead one. A lot of those places are really changed. They look very different. Night of the Creeps is another one I'm working on, which is a lot of the locations are gone. You know, taking pictures of empty lots, or you know. So, you know, one thing that's been really cool about this is the fact that as I do it, I've been coming closer with the people involved. You know, and it's like Fred Decker. I mean, he was completely instrumental in me finding all the Night of the Creeps locations. Yeah. I had no idea where they were. And I got him on the phone one day, and we sat down while I had him on the phone, and I was just playing the DVD going, okay, where's this at? And he's telling me, okay, where's this at? You know.
I would figure most of that would be sets. Like the sorority house, is that an actual house?
It's an actual sorority house.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of the interiors in that movie were sets. The exteriors were all real locations, and they did use the interior and exterior of the main sorority house in Night of the Creeps. So they used it. It's real,
yeah.
And it's a real sorority house on the sorority row at USC campus. USC.
Going back to the Halloween convention, I know John Carpenter. I believe John Carpenter was originally scheduled to be there.
Yeah, well, here's the deal with that. I booked probably 50% of the guests for that show.
Yeah.
And I personally didn't have any contact with John. That was all Miss Massey. And he put him on the site as tentative, and a week before the convention said that he canceled or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he says. I don't, you know. You guys can take it for what it is.
Yeah, because I know he rarely does conventions.
He does. Yeah. He rarely does conventions. And we were told that he was, you know, tentative. And then at the last second, conveniently, a week before the show, he was pulled. So I don't know. I don't know if that was BS. I don't know how real that was. All I know is he didn't show up, and I had nothing to do with it.
There was a couple of people that were noticeably absent. I think Dominique Athenin-Girard.
Yeah, we couldn't find him. Apparently he's been found because he's on the commentary of that new H5 disc.
Yeah.
But at the time, we had no clue where he was, and we were trying to find him. I mean, we pretty much invited everybody. I mean, I tell you right now, if they weren't there, they were probably contacted, and it was their choice.
Yeah.
I mean, Deborah Hill flat out said no. She was pretty nasty about it, too.
Mm.
But I think she thought that we were working directly with, like, the Akkads and the Yablons, and who apparently she had had a falling out with. And, you know, we didn't really get a chance to explain to her that we were just fans putting on the show before she hung up on us. So, that was a... And plus, I mean, you know, in hindsight... I mean, we didn't know she was going through some serious medical stuff, you know. I mean, we heard that, like, I think something like 6 months after the convention, she had both her legs
didn't know that.
From diabetes. So. And then, you know, soon after she passed away. So, I mean, you know, kind of got to, you know, forgive her a little bit for being rude. I mean, she was going through a lot in her life. So, walked out of this room. My other phone's ringing. moving on.
Yeah, I just want to talk about some of the interviews that you do, because I know that you've done some for Grid Central and some in the past, but you've interviewed people like Romero and Eli Roth and people like that. Who would you say would be your favorite interview subject?
There's a lot, but, you know, I mean, I really enjoy people who are passionate and fun and don't take shit, and they're willing to talk about anything. You know, for example, somebody that just comes off the top of my head is James Gunn.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a cool guy. I mean, James is a fan, man. You know, he's one of us. He's passionate. He just doesn't give a shit. You know, he has a good time with it. I mean, Slither, I thought, fucking rocked.
Yeah, we did too.
I'm totally bummed it didn't do well at the box office. I think it's going to have a huge life on DVD, and I hope it does, because, you know, I think his career took a little bit of a hit by how poorly it did at the box office. He's great. I love Rob Zombie. Rob is always fun to interview because he's so candid and so outspoken, and another one of those guys that just doesn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. He's great. You know, you get bored with some of the people. Just find they feel like they're just going through the motions. They just feel like they're giving you the same answers that you hear in every interview.
We've gotten that a lot, where people will just start to talk, and they basically like they've got a script that they've read a million times. They know exactly where they're going, and you're not going to get in any questions.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, Romero's a little bit like that. Wes Craven's a little bit like that. Carpenter as well, you know? You know, it's I don't know.
I guess it's where those guys have done so many interviews. It's just, you know, nothing to them. They just know exactly what they're going to say before you ask it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always try to mix it up. I always try to throw something at them they're not expecting, you know, just to get a reaction. Yeah. I mean, Wes Craven is so... He seems almost like a talking corpse at times.
Yeah, he makes movies like a talking corpse now, though.
I mean, I did it on camera with him once, and just to fuck with him, just to see if I could get a reaction out of him, to wake him up. I threw something at him out of the blue, because I love doing that. I'm very sarcastic and dry, so a lot of times people won't realize if I'm fucking with them or not. And I was interviewing him, and I just looked at him deadpan, and I just said, tell me, you know, Shocker 2, Electric Boogaloo, is it going to happen? And he just it was almost like somebody hit him in the stomach. He just went, oh, and then he just started laughing out loud. And he just said, I'm there, man, like that. That's it. So he was bored about it, and it kind of woke him up a little bit. But, you know,
I think a good Breaking 2 reference wakes most people up. Yeah.
Speaking of Breaking, you know, I do this Convention All-Stars thing where we, you know, we basically book celebrities in the conventions all over the world. And it's weird. We get the weirdest calls, man. I mean, it's so strange because the word gets out. Celebrities tell celebrities. I got a call today out of the blue. I'm driving. This is 2 hours ago. I shit you not. True story. 2 hours ago, I'm driving. Phone rings. Don't recognize the number. I answer it. It's fucking Michael Pare.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie and the Cruiser.
Eddie and the Cruiser.
Yeah,
I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me, fucking Michael Pare's calling me.
I guess that is kind of surreal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it just, weird shit like that happens all the time. We got a call, about a month ago, from Boogaloo Shrimp.
Yeah, from Breaking 2.
From Breaking and Breaking 2. He is Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Boogaloo Shrimp calls us. He wants us to rep him for conventions. And, I don't know what's going to happen with him, but he was a character. Let me just say, I thought we were talking to Michael Winslow from Police Academy. He kept making sounds, and I'm serious. He'd be like, yeah, you know, so I want to do the convention. That'd be cool. And he just started. we're like, what the fuck is going on with this guy?
Is that, he's got like some form of Tourette's now that can't be stopped because of that?
He's been breaking too long. Something's broken.
Yeah, he's still breaking. it was bizarre. But yeah, so we'll see what happens with that guy. But we rep like five different Michael Myers, five different Jasons. It's so surreal, you know. Like today I talked, just on a regular day, I got phone calls from Don Shanks, Brian Andrews, you know, Tommy Doyle.
Uh-huh.
You know, I talked to Steve Dash today. He called me. It's just like, it's so weird. I'm so used to it now. But then when I step back and think about it, go, Jesus Christ, fucking Jason, Michael, and Tommy Doyle called today. That's so weird. And Michael Paré.
We should all be so lucky. But
yeah, it's odd, you know.
Speaking of Steve Dash, though, do you have any idea whatever happened with that whole Warrington Gillette scene?
Oh, fuck, I know the whole story, man.
Well, I'd love to hear that. I've always wondered that myself.
Oh, man, yeah, you should read my... I have an interview on Dread Central with Steve Dash where he spills the beans on everything, but I'll give you the short version.
Okay.
Funny thing is, I did an interview with Warrington Gillette like 2 years ago, and, you know, he's telling me all this stuff about being Jason. You know, we went to lunch together, and he told me all, you know, did a great interview. He's a really nice guy, and he's a little nutty. Well, not a little nutty. He's a lot nutty. I found out later. He's pretty cuckoo, but very nice. Not a malicious guy by any means. You know, just a little nutty. So anyway, Steve Dash comes onto the scene, and it's like, okay, who's this guy? Well, you know, word gets out. Well, Steve Dash is the guy who really played Jason, and Warrington only played him in the scene jumping through the window, you know, when he's unmasked. Now, the problem is, Warrington had been going around for, like, ever telling everybody he was Jason, the one and only. He did everything. You know, people would ask him about scenes. He would, oh, yeah, you know.
God.
Yeah. And so what happened, this whole thing kind of came to a head. They had a Friday the 13th 25th anniversary convention out here in L.A. And I went to it, and I saw the confrontation. What happened is Warrington was sitting at one table signing, Dash was sitting at another. They had not spoken, and some fan walks up with a picture of Dash signed by Warrington Gillette and wanted Dash to sign it also. And Dash, man, he doesn't fuck around. He's old school, man. He's like he should be on The Sopranos, man. He's a fucking wise guy. He's like, what the fuck is this, you know? And he gets up, he walks over to Warrington, he puts the picture down, he's all, who the fuck do you think you are signing my picture? That's fucking my picture. You're selling my fucking picture. You know, telling people it's you. You know, and Warrington is just fucking... And what ends up happening, it was fucking funny as shit. He tells him, he goes, well, I don't remember. I don't really remember what scenes I was in. You know, I had a skiing accident a few years ago, and I hit my head, and I forgot. Swear to God, tells him he had, like, amnesia. He fucking hit his head and couldn't remember what scene. So Dash then tells him, he goes, you want me to tell you what fucking scenes you did? You jumped through a window. That's it. In fact, you didn't even fucking jump through the window. They had to build a harness to swing you through because you were too fucking scared. And ever since, basically... Warrington's convention career has kind of died.
Oh, God.
So that's pretty much what happened. And the funny thing is, man, you ever interview Dash, if you want to get him on a roll, just ask him, say, hey, what do you think of Warrington Gillette?
Yeah, I kind of figured he didn't like him, but I would never thought that.
Oh, man. It's funny. I call Dash all the time. We're really good friends. And, like, I'll call him up and I'll say, hey, Steve, you know, this convention's interested in you. Oh, get this. Fucking Richard Brooker on the other line right now. I'm not going to... Hold on.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer it. Anyway, I got Jason from Part 3 calling me right now while I'm talking about Jason from Part 2. Anyway, so Dash, whenever I call Dash to tell him about a convention, he always says to me, hey, that Warrington guy is isn't going to be there, is he? Yeah. Or no, he calls him Warrington. Warrington, fella. Nah, he won't be there, Steve.
Another thing that, while we're on the subject, that I've always wondered about is, do you know anything about the whole reason? I've never in my life seen a convention that has Gunnar Hansen and Andrew Bernowski in the same convention. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I did see another confrontation, though, at a Fango 2 years ago when Bernowski and Ari Mihailov got into it. They had to be separated.
Yeah, I think I've read about that somewhere, too.
Yeah, I was there. I saw it happen. It was funny as hell. And as much as I love R.A., man, R.A. is my boy. Me and him have been tight for years. I think he would have got his ass whooped.
Those are both huge guys, though. I have to say. Isn't R.A. was a wrestler at one time, I think.
He looks like a wrestler.
I think what, R.A.'s probably 10, 15 years older.
Yeah, I think Bernowski's jacked up on...
He's probably got roids.
Steroids.
Oh. Oh, no, I have no doubt Bernarski has roid rage going on. Yeah, he wanted us to work with him for a while, and I don't think we want to deal with that headache.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's certain, I tell you, man, that's the one thing that does suck about being in the position I'm in and meeting all these people. A lot of people that you do look up to end up being, not I'm saying that Bernarski is this way, but I'm just saying there are people that end up being a disappointment. I'll give you a fucking story right now. Last night, Snakes on a Plane premiere. I go to the after party. So, you know, there's a couple hundred people there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
500 people, you know. I go up to Samuel L. Jackson last night. Just ask him if I want to get a photo with him. So I walk up to him, and I go, Mr. Jackson. He turns around and he goes, what the fuck do you want? And I go, I was just wondering if I could get a picture with you. No?
What the fuck? That guy's fucking awesome. I'm sorry, but this...
And I thought I was talking to the character, Jackson. I can't just get a quick photo with you. That's what they always say. They always say it's a quick photo. Then everybody wants a photo. Man, there's too many motherfucking cameras in this party.
Yeah, he's having all the motherfucking cameras at that motherfucking party.
Yeah. Yeah, I was waiting for that, and I just go, well, you know, it is a premier party, you know? So he basically said no. Uh-huh. And, you know, and the thing that sucks about that is, you know, he's an asshole to me, right?
Yeah.
And for the rest of my life, every time I see him on screen, I'm going to remember that moment, you know? Every time I watch Pulp Fiction, I'm not going to be able to enjoy it like I used to, because I'm going to be going, God, that guy was a dick, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't think about that. They don't think about that. To a fan, that small window, that what might be 10 seconds, 5 seconds to them, is going to be something that stays with a fan for a lifetime. And it's funny, I just heard Rob Zombie say this very same thing in an interview, I think on, I don't know what it was on, but I just saw him do an interview recently where he said this almost word for word what I just said about how, you know, he's always so good to his fans because that's going to be with them forever, you know, just like when he met people he looked up to, you know, and is always going to look back on that small moment in time, you know.
Yeah.
I remember one time I met Jamie Lee Curtis. I'd met her like 5 times. She was always really nice, but one night she was coming out of a screening and a friend of mine wanted his Halloween poster signed real bad. He'd never met her, right?
Yeah.
She's walking out and my friend goes, Jamie, you know, would you mind signing this for me? And she goes, not tonight, guys. I'll get you next time. And just walks by. And I'm just like thinking to myself, fucking next time? What's that going to be, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, should we meet you later, you know? I mean, what the hell does that mean? And then if you see her, say, 5 years down the road and she pulls it again, you go, oh, no, excuse, last time you said you'd get me next time. It's been like 5 years. This is now, next time. Could you, you know, give me a break. It's like, come on.
Yeah, she probably called the cops then.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is James Bryant, director of Don't Go in the Woods Alone, and you're listening to this on DeadPit.com.
Welcome back to DeadPit Whole Talk Radio. I am Uncle Bill.
And I am Sweet Kite.
Hey, Georgia! So we want to talk a little bit about what we're going to do next week on the program, because next week we will be back from the Fright Night Film Festival.
That's right, folks.
Which will be in Louisville, Kentucky, by the way, if we haven't mentioned that. And what we want to try to do while we're down there, if at all possible, is there's going to be some celebrities down there like Gunnar Hansen and John Dugan and Joe Bob Briggs and a couple other people that we would really like to try to get interviews with. So we're going to try to do that on site at the festival if we can. And then we're going to play those interviews sometime for you when we get back.
Hopefully. We can. You don't never know how these people will be, but whatever.
Yeah, we don't know about.
And it's not going to be like style interviews that we do on the show. It'll probably be just,
how you doing? Been
how
having
are
fun?
You? You know, you like Kentucky and all that stuff. And I'm sure they'll say no.
Have a good lunch.
Yeah. It'll just be us bullshitting probably, you know.
But we may be able to do some kind of little something down there, because I know Tim Gross is going to be down there, so we can talk to him.
Yeah,
you know, about the book.
And we're bringing our high-tech 8mm camera, Super 8, by God.
And not even to mention the audio equipment that we're bringing down there. It takes a fuck. See, we've got to load up the mini U-Haul we got for the audio equipment.
We have to do all that the night before
and
get that ready, you know.
Because that's how we roll.
But anyway, that's what we're going to try to do next week. And also, what we need to say is everybody that checks out this weekend, our table, you'll get exclusive news.
It's a scoop.
About a future episode of Dead Pit Radio it's going to be over a month in planning. And it's possibly one of the biggest interviews, definitely the biggest interview to me personally. But it's definitely a big name in the horror genre. And that one will be about a month from now, but we're not going to tell you what it is until we'll start hyping it to the folks next week.
Yeah.
But if you're down there in Louisville, you're going to get to find out exactly who it is that we have, because the propaganda will be in abundance, folks.
That's right. We've got so many friggin' flyers and shit like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we encourage everyone to come down and see us there. Fright Night Film Fest, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, and don't be scared of us.
Yeah, I mean, imagine you would.
We are creepy and crazy Kentuckians, but we're really we're friendly and everything. Just don't steal our moonshine
and don't have a pretty mouth, because I can't stand that.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to real quick mention that if anybody's curious, you can find the directions for Friday Night Film Fest on the site, and I'm just going to go ahead and give them to you right now. 2715 Fern Valley Road, Louisville, Kentucky 40213. There you go. That's about as much as I can plug that.
Check that out.
Okay.
And don't be afraid. Hey, I know there's a big plane crash in Lexington this past weekend. Lexington, Kentucky. The other city in Kentucky.
Yeah, you probably don't want to tell them that, do you?
I want to say because, it wasn't the guy's fault. He was barely awake. He didn't know what he was doing. Don't be scared. Come here. We're really a bunch of smart people in Kentucky.
We are. I mean, we're incredibly intelligent.
We usually don't take the wrong runway and blow ourselves up, you know.
That only very seldom happens.
Rarely happens. Yeah. So anyway, fan mail.
Fan mail section, here we go. This one comes to us from a new member of the board who I absolutely love the handle and the profile pic that they got, called Rhodes is God.
That's right.
Which is in reference to, I'm assuming, Captain Rhodes from Day of the Dead.
Choke on him, motherfucker.
Obviously, there's been a lot of talk of remakes these days. Everyone seems to love remakes made by directors that truly love the original. Carpenter's The Thing and Cronenberg's The Fly come to mind. Do you guys feel as if the remake reimagining of Halloween by Rob Zombie should be thrown into this category? Or at least that maybe people should give it a chance because of his love for the genre?
I think people should give it a chance because the Halloween series is in the shitter. Halloween Resurrection was by far the worst of the whole series. I don't think anybody would argue that.
Yeah. See, when this first came along, I was just fucking all against the idea of Rob Zombie doing it, because I just didn't think it was his genre films, not least the way he seemed like more of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre type of guy than he did a Halloween guy. There's just different styles. But, the way I started to look at it was that somebody's going to do his fucking film. And it might as well be somebody like him that likes the genre of horror anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it should be given a chance because I actually gave him a chance for Devil's Reject because we hated House of Thousand Corpses, and that turned out well. So.
Yeah. Give it a chance, you know. I'm sure the movie will make a fucking ton, you know. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, just because of the name, it'll make a ton.
I mean, Resurrection made a shitload of money, and it was bad. Anyway, though, a new member of the board, JHuddy666, and he is a child of the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, guys.
Member of the Beast.
I have a quick question here. Who do you think would win in a three-way battle between Ghoulies, the Critters, and the Hobgoblins? He said, I would put my money on Critters.
Oh, God. I see, I'm trying to figure out because I don't remember what the hell it is that the Ghoulies did. Do they have any, like, special powers, or do they just run around?
They're just little evil bastards, yeah, like, biting people's asses.
The Critters could actually roll themselves up into balls, like little porcupines, and shoot shit, like, out at you. So, I'll take the Critters.
But I'll take the Ghoulies.
The Hobgoblins, that's like a film I haven't heard anything about in forever.
Yeah.
You're taking the Ghoulies? Why the hell would you take the Ghoulies?
I like the Ghoulies. I always like those movies better than Critters.
Here we go. There's one question that I think we stirred this question up from the round table. This is from HD1201C. Okay, and this says...
It's not B, it's C.
Yeah, that's right. It says, one of my favorite movies, just because it was so bad it was good, was Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
That was a great movie.
It says, do you guys know if they'll be releasing this on DVD ever? Or is there some copyright issue holding it back like so many other horror movies?
Well... Do you know the answer to this?
Actually, I have no idea.
There's a DVD out of it, but it is Region Zero, and it's PAL. It's a PAL format, which means possibly your DVD player can play it. If you look on the internet, there's definitely codes where you can hack your DVD player. It'll play the PAL discs. It'll format them. So, yeah. If you want to check it out, go to eBay and look for it. They usually have it on there.
There's not an official release, though, is there?
Well, as far as a U.S. official release, no, there's not.
There's actually, amazingly, an official release. Anchor Bay did a Chud in there.
Yeah. The original. You get that Chud for almost next to nothing on deep discount, so if you don't have that. We got something from Brother D, who is another new member on the board. I got to say, I loved the show last week. The round table was great. And I hope you do more of them in the future. And I believe what we're going to do is we sort of talked about it, and we might as well mention it, that one thing that we possibly are going to do on the Friday the 13th special, which comes up in October, is have a roundtable about the Friday the 13th series, possible future of the series, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll be looking for people that want to be
in that.
I think
we have at least one person in mind that we want to.
Anyway, though, he mentioned, I'm a collector of movie soundtracks. Don't give me a rock-filled or worse, pop-filled CD. I love movie scores, and horror films sometimes have the best film music.
They do.
As much as Hostel bores me, I actually enjoy Nathan Barr's score for the film, which I really don't remember the score.
I don't remember the score of Hostel at all.
I hate remakes, but Graham Revell's score from the recent The Fog isn't that bad either. And, yeah, he's actually a pretty good composer. You know, you hear that name a lot. Of course, the better music comes to mind from original films. Hands down, my favorite would be John Carpenter's score for Prince of Darkness. Do you have any particular film scores that you can recommend, avoiding the standards of John Carpenter's Halloween or even Jaws? Or Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells from Exorcist. If you have to add the next CD to my horror music library, what would you recommend?
Two came right to my head right when you said that. Phantasm and City of Living Dead.
Yeah. Actually, one that I have gotten recently, and I'm going to add some stuff to the show, and I think I did already, was the soundtrack to The Beyond, which was another really good one. It had a lot of choir, like evil choir music.
I'll tell you another one that had some really fucking wild, like choir-ish music was Opera.
Yeah, Opera.
Argento.
Yeah, if you haven't checked out any, a lot of the Italian movies, Fabio Frizzi does the Fulci movies, and you have Goblin, or Claudio Simonetti, who does the music for Argento's films usually. Those are all great. You can check those out. The Phantasm one's awesome, as you mentioned before.
What do you think about American, like, horror scores? I know we always talk about Italian ones on there. Is there any ones that you can think of that... Because the ones I'm thinking of include, like I always thought Return of the Living Dead had a killer score, but that was all bands.
Yeah, like pretty much.
Punk bands, mostly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some, but I just really can't think of any right now. Actually, I'm looking up at the poster now. Some of the score music to the Monster Squad is pretty good, if you remember it.
Yeah, Rock Until You Drop.
No, I'm talking about, like, you know, just the... Dun, dun, you remember that?
The orchestra. Oh, yeah. Yeah, when the
pretty cool.
Monsters come into it and stuff.
Yeah. You know, there's not a lot, really, that I can remember. I'm sure there probably is some good scores. Of course, John Carpenter is probably one of the best composers that I can think of.
I have to say
I know it's not...
Yeah, his score for The Fog was awesome. Yeah. If you don't know, and then Prince of Darkness score was pretty good, too. Okay, so here's a question from another new member.
I actually have a couple of questions from Brother.
Is there more on it?
There's some more from Brother D.
Okay.
He says, thank you. Because of your recommendation on the show, I ordered the Halloween 25 Years of Terror. I received my copy through Amazon and watched it tonight. It's excellent. Thanks for pointing me in the direction of this great film. Now, the question. What film or film franchise would you like to see given this sort of documentary treatment? The Friday the 13th series, Nightmare on Elm Street, or Romero's Dead films? And he goes, okay, that's a given. I think everyone in Dead Pit Land would love to see attention given to Romero's Dead films, and we actually have mentioned that
before.
So excluding Night of the Living Dead, which film or film series should receive this sort of treatment? And, of course, why?
Excluding Night of the Living Dead, which film or film series?
Well, I think he's talking about Romero's Dead movies. Okay, I'll tell you one real quick that I'm thinking of. The Fulci films, all of them, and do like a, you know, get all the people, or most of the people still alive. You know, I know Catherine McCall, who was in a lot of Fulci's movies.
And you'd have issues with rights.
Fabio Frizzi is also still alive, and they could talk about Fulci. And Fulci's daughter does a few conventions, and she could be on there. There's not a lot of rights issues. Anchor Bay could do it. Anchor Bay owns a lot of his.
Shriek Show owns Zombie, though.
Well, Anchor Bay also has a release of Zombie, too.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they own it now. So that would be... And that guy that... Bill Lustig's Blue Underground... who's Shriek Show's head fucker? Can't remember now. Anyway, but yeah, there would be some kind of rights issue with that. But
yeah, but Anchor Bay owns a great majority of movies. Just aside from that one movie, that'd be perfect. Anchor Bay, they're good pals. Release that. Do something like that.
This is a tough question.
Be interesting.
I think that they should have, as far as like a special edition of a series. We've talked about this before. And if I was in Fantasyland, I would say that they put all the phantasms. But that's like major rights shit there. Yeah. And see, there's all kinds of film series that I wish they would do that way. But because I'm not really happy with the Friday the 13th series, the way they did that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do the damn Nightmare on Elm Street series that way because it's already been done. But
when has it been done?
The box set.
Yeah, but they didn't really do any extras with it.
Yeah, that's true, but they didn't really do any, for Friday 13th either.
That's what I'm saying, though. They could actually do it with Nightmare on Elm Street. Just release a separate disc. Shit. Of course, who is it? New Line? They probably wouldn't do that. They're not known to do
Paramount's
stuff like that.
Paramount's probably the worst for that, though.
But that's all the questions from Brother D.
Why in the hell couldn't they put, like, a Return of the Living Dead box set together?
Well,
now see, that's the thing though. A lot of people don't like Return of the Living Dead 2 or 3, mm-hmm. or 4 or 5 for that matter. But I thought 5 was horrible. But the rest of those movies are all right.
Let's see, though. Part one is MGM.
Yeah.
Part two's Warner Brothers.
I have no idea who did part two.
I've got part two on DVD. I think it's Warner Brothers. Part three. Now, what's part three? Who you got the DVD of
that's
that?
That's Melinda Clark one.
Who owns it, though?
I haven't got the fucking clue. I don't look at like the company.
I don't think it's either company.
Isn't it supposed to be like Fantasyland, though? I mean, isn't it supposed to be like what you'd want?
No, you have to be serious and see if you can legally do it.
Yeah. So here comes the next question from another new member, Friday 13th fan. Friday 13th fan. Okay. It says, hey, guys. My friend George Zombie got me into the show, and I really enjoy it. I was curious about your favorite bad movies that maybe wouldn't be universally considered horror movies. So, also, do you know if there are any plans to release The Burning on DVD in the United States? I need to see the fingers of little children sheared off in DVD quality.
There was actually a rumor that MGM was going to release The Burning finally, like about 3 years ago, and it never came to happen. I mean, it's...
MGM and United Artists Home Entertainment owns the VHS rights to that film. Now, here's the thing. Dragon Film Entertainment in Germany puts out a DVD of it, and it's called the. There's another one that's like a special edition called the Raptor DVD of that you can find on eBay. Yeah. And also in the UK, there's a company called Vibco, VIPCO, that owns it. But as far as I've never heard any rumors recently about them releasing it on DVD.
No, that's a shame, too, because that was a really great slasher film.
And the first part of the question was favorite bad movies that we wouldn't universally consider horror. Jeez, do we even watch anything besides horror movies anymore?
Not anymore.
One of the guys.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
I think it was one that I'm thinking of that I always used to watch as a kid. And I don't know if I ever showed it to you, but I always mentioned it to you. It was like an Animal House ripoff.
You did mention that.
And it was called Delta House.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's also called Frat King or King Frat or something like that, the alternate title. And it's freaking awesome. I always loved that movie. And actually had the guy in it when, if you remember the show Pete and Pete on Nickelodeon.
I do, yeah.
The father in that movie, it is when he was younger, and he was the John Belushi character. That's who he was playing. And they had great stuff like, you know, fart contests, and it was an awesome part where the guys in the frat, it's obviously a college movie again. They take compressed shit. They compress shit in like a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the dean of the college, he just died and it was his funeral or something. And they go back and they put they light the shit brick on fire and set it next to a vent. So, and for some fucking reason, if anybody else is listening to this show that's seen this movie, why the fuck does everybody in the funeral start laughing?
I don't know. I've never seen this.
Smell the burnt shit. Is that maybe hydroponic? Is that a natural high or something?
Yeah, he would probably do it.
That movie's hilarious. I'd love to see it again.
I'm a huge lover of like what most people consider to be horrible fucking action films. Like, I love Chuck Norris movies. Yeah. I love Code of Silence and Invasion USA, and probably Invasion USA more than any of them.
Anytime Chuck Norris tries to act, it's just great.
It is. Didn't work, did it? Now it will.
I remember the movie.
And there's also the Billy Jack series. Most people would not consider that to be the greatest series, but we both like those movies.
Yeah. One Chuck Norris movie I wanted to talk about real quick was Silent Rage.
Which is actually kind of a horror film.
Yeah, it is. It's probably the only Chuck Norris horror movie. And Chuck Norris, you know, he tries to hit on a woman in the movie. That's the most hilarious scene ever, you know.
He makes, like, Eric Freeman look like some kind of fucking method actor or something.
Yeah, another one, though, I wanted to mention I always used to watch as a kid. I think it was Meatballs 2, or it might have been 3, and Patrick Dempsey was in it.
Yeah, I've seen that one, actually.
I always liked that.
Yeah. Anyway, I digress.
I don't think it's on DVD. I don't think it'll ever be out.
What else do we got?
Okay. From Dark Claw, what was the first horror movie that was the most important to make you a horror fan?
Oh, that's easy. Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, God, this is difficult because this goes back a long time.
Dawn of the Dead is the movie that I watched. I didn't even know. Like, I was probably too young to even realize what the hell, like, the difference between genres was, but I watched that movie religiously even back then. I was 6, 7 years old.
The Friday the 13th franchise starts from the first day I ever watched a horror movie was when we watched Psycho 2 and we watched Friday the 13th Part 6, I think. So, yeah, I mean, those were the ones that got me started. And I started watching, really, the Friday the 13th series because I started renting them all after Part 6. So,
which it is odd, though, if you think about it. Like, Dawn of the Dead is probably one of the first horror films that I really, truly liked, and it's probably the best horror film ever. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the thing is around here, too, like, you didn't really have a chance to see a lot of the more rare stuff. I think you said your dad had a copy of Dawn of the Dead, right?
What he would used to do, which was this fucking hilarious now thing about it, was he would rent movies from, you know, local, like, VHS store or whatever, and he would have two VCRs set up, and he would just make, like, copies of them. Back in the day, for Macrovision, all that bullshit, where you could actually just, you know, tape onto another VCR, and he would tape all these horror films that he liked onto, like, one VHS tape. Yeah. And I used to, you know, sit around and watch all of them. I know he had one. It had, you know, it had like Dawn of the Dead and Zombie from Fulci on it. And I think that it might have had Reanimator on it. Just a bunch of different, like, zombie movies.
Well, I remember the freaking places that I used to go. And there used to be, it was two places. It was Genie Wiley Video, which used to be music video.
Uh-huh.
And there was New World, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very rarely would you. I think I saw Day of the Dead in there. I don't remember seeing Dawn of the Dead in there to rent.
Yeah.
Another thing that was odd was I remember as a kid, I never thought there was an original Evil Dead because I'd never seen it. I always saw the Evil Dead 2, and we, of course, rented that, the cover of that, and make any little kid, like, horror moist. But anyway, I never did think there was an Evil Dead 1. When I was a kid.
I don't remember ever seeing. I remember seeing Evil Dead 2 because the skull cover was pretty classic. And I know they had a bunch of like those posters up right around the.
I don't know what the deal is with that, but anyway.
But actually, the thing about this Evil Dead, the first Evil Dead was one of the very first movies that got like a huge cult audience on video. It didn't really do that great on, you know, in theaters.
Yeah.
This is from Adam Beck, who is apparently my stepdad now. Which is awesome because that makes Kimberly Beck my step grandmother.
Yeah.
So we can.
She's got big jugs for grandma. Yeah,
she does. Get some candy off of it later. It says, "Hey fellas, I know you guys just recently got into watching Asian horror films, and I wanted to know, out of all the ones you've seen thus far, which one did you like the most? Haven't seen many horror films from Asia, but I'm interesting in checking some out."
You're not interesting.
No, he's really not. "Also, if a hurricane ends up destroying my house here in Florida, which is possibly happening right now, would it be okay if I moved up to Kentucky and lived with you guys for a while? I figure I could probably get a job working with creepy Kentucky in the coal mines, or maybe get a job at the elementary school with Uncle Bill, showing little kids my balls and hairy ass." Hey, nobody shows kids their balls and hairy ass except me. I'm the janitor, and that's my job.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm the custodian.
We
don't use term janitor. That's insensitive. So what's our favorite Asian horror film that we've seen so far?
The Uninvited, probably.
Yeah, if you're going for like the typical really bizarre, surreal type of Asian horror film, I would say The Uninvited too. But I liked Stacy and Junk a lot for the zombie aspect of those kind of films.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Asian films is the only problem I have with them is a lot of them are just based on like ghost stories and stuff. And it can get sort of annoying if that's all they are. And a lot of them is that. Like, it's just a fucking ghost story again. Like, who cares?
Here's the thing I've noticed about most Asian horror films that we've watched. They don't have a problem whatsoever with killing children.
Yeah, and I support that.
We have to support baby killing because yeah. I don't know what kind of horse sight we'd be if we did.
But, you know, I like, there is a lot of the Japanese stuff we reviewed on here, we actually recommend most of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff that from Tartan that we've seen has actually been really good. So, just go on the Tartan Extreme site and look up all the stuff. And they got a ton of shit. And we're going to be talking about more of it.
If you're asking us which one of the films we recommend, I think we both pretty much recommend The Uninvited.
Here's something from another new member of the board. John of the Dead.
Okay. Isn't there a Dawn of the Dead
on
them?
There's Dawn of the Dead and there's Rick of the Dead.
And now there's John of the Dead. That must be a popular film. Who would have thunk it?
Do you guys think that Tom Savini has been passed up by the industry, or is he just not being given the chance to do anything new? What do you want Tom Savini to do?
Passed up by the industry? He used to be the whole fucking industry, really. I mean, as far as makeup effects go.
Well, I think he made it clear that he's retired from makeup effects.
Yeah, the thing about it is he can't. You know, K&B have basically cornered the market on anything that has to do with makeup. And CGI.
As far as the stuff that he used to do, right?
Yeah, and CGI is taking over everything else, so what in the hell? He can't really do anything now.
Yeah, I think he's focusing more on acting right now, so it's not like. And if I was being honest, the stuff that Tom Savini did was great and everything back in the day, but yeah, he's been passed up. I mean, as far as the technical look of stuff, as even makeup effects go.
Yeah, but how I long for the fucking days when when makeup actually looked like that and didn't look like computerized bullshit that it does now.
I'm not talking about computerized stuff. I'm just saying the stuff that Greg Nicotero can do right now, I don't think Tom Savini could do it, ever.
Yeah, but I just think that when I look at Land of the Dead and a lot of the effects he did, where he mixed some of those, you know, animatronic effects with, like, CG effects, I don't like that shit at all.
Yeah, but it wasn't his fault, CG. I'm sure that was done by somebody else.
I just think that Savini, I'm sure he has been surpassed technically, but I just think that stuff looks a lot better. I always will probably think that.
Well, you're next. Go on. Fan mail, goddamn. Stupid shit.
All right. This comes to us from Rhodes as God again. One of my favorite subgenres are giallo.
Giallo.
What are your favorite giallo films? I would pick probably opera because I liked it a little bit better than I did Deep Red.
Yeah. A lot of those movies, too, like, if you're looking for a fucking plot, you're not going to get it, really.
That's the thing. Some people were turned off by the fact that, and this is, Argento and Fulci, neither one of them gave a shit about plot at all.
Yeah.
Like, Zombie is the closest Fulci ever came to a plot. I'm fairly certain of that. So, a lot of people don't like that, but that was their thing. If you watch an Argento and Fulci movie, they're not supposed to make any sense. Just a bunch of scenes strewn together. But, yeah, I would pick probably opera out of all those films.
I would pick, actually, Profondo Rosso, a.k.a. Deep Red, not because it's that great of a movie, because it's not one of Argento's best, just because that's, if you want to know what a giallo film is, that's definitely what it is, because the movie makes no damn sense at all. It's all style, and it's got some damn creepy stuff in it, too.
Yeah, so there you go.
And what's unfortunate about the DVD of that, we watched it probably, what, about a year ago, there's dialogue missing from it, and they go back from the subtitles to the actual dubbing, and it's sort of annoying. I just wish they would do all dubbing instead of...
I've actually heard, though, that his new film, Do You Like Hitchcock, which I think is supposed to return to that.
Yeah, which we do actually have.
It's supposed to be a pretty good film.
Yeah.
So we'll be watching that soon.
We'll be talking about that soon. Okay, we have something from Rick of the Dead.
Shit.
If they made another Versus movie along the lines of Freddy versus Jason, who would you like to see? He's got Chucky versus Leprechaun, Pinhead versus Wishmaster, Jack Frost versus Uncle Sam.
That'd be a good one.
Et cetera, something like that.
I love the look that you just gave me that says it all.
What?
We really don't give a shit. I mean, honestly.
Okay, here's one I come up with that I thought would be sort of funny.
God damn it.
The Gates Minions versus Troll.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Both, like, really crappy fucking makeup effects.
All right, how about this? How about the Tall Man versus the Leprechaun? Yeah, that's that. You know, you got the differences in style right there.
I'm not a fan of the Versus movies, though. I'd rather not see any of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't really give a shit. Like, there was a period of time there where they wanted to do, what was it, Freddy versus Jason versus Ash?
Yeah, versus Michael.
Oh, God, who gives a shit? How about this, Leatherface versus Pinhead? Or Freddy versus Leatherface.
Goonies versus Monster Squad.
Versus Monster. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, next question comes to us from some asshole. I don't fucking even know who it is. Don't fucking care. Find who it is. Do you truly believe Eli Roth will never make a quality horror movie? I like him, and I never let him blow me, but do you think he blows Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino? And last, what is a scene in the Eli Roth film do you hate the most? I am a fan of him and a huge fan of used guys, but I can't get enough of the Roth bashing. Keep speaking your mind, homies. Runk Russell.
That's right. Keep it real. So, I don't think Eli Roth will ever make a movie worth a shit. I'll just go ahead and say it.
I'm done talking about Eli Roth. Yep. I really am. Fuck him.
Something from Gornography. Whatever name that is.
I think it's Gornography, isn't it?
Whatever. I don't give a fuck. Gornography. Gornography. Buddy, I don't know. These motherfuckers.
I don't give a fuck.
Okay, here's a question from Gornography on the board. Another new member. Mm-hmm. Have you guys noticed how many horror films have a dog in them and then the dog gets killed?
You fucking asshole. I swear to Christ. You cut out the tip of the ship and shit, you're going to bring the stupid-ass dog question on you. That's funny.
Okay. Let's just go ahead and I'll leave this in here. Okay. I've noticed that dogs do get killed. I have noticed that. Michael Myers likes to eat dogs.
Well, that's a trend.
And, you know. They killed the dog in the gate, too. You remember that?
Yeah, they shot a dog in Toxic Avenger and blew it across the floor. It was a CNI dog. That was killer. I'll tell you something else, too. Didn't a dog have a flashback in Hills Have Eyes Part 2?
Dog? That is yeah. Right. And they killed a dog in
the Hills Have Eyes. And in Race with the Devil, they nailed that fucking dog to the door.
That's right. They killed that motherfucker, too.
There's a lot of dogs that get killed in films. I'm for animal cruelty, though, so I think that's a good thing. That's a wonderful question, by the way. I appreciate you sending that in.
That's true.
You dumb bitch.
Okay. I think that's it.
Oh, really? Ain't any more fucking dog questions? Like cats and shit? Well, no. Anything else about Eli Roth?
Yeah.
Cocksuckers.
Folks just don't stop asking us about old Eli. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm going to put up like a thesis about why I hate all his film. So that'll answer everybody's question.
Yeah. So.
I hate him because he fucking sucks and that's all you people need to know.
Yeah, that's definitely is all people need to know. You know. I guess we need to talk about who won the tarot cards last week. We actually gave away 2 Linnea Quigley tarot cards. The winners of the signed tarot cards. And thanks to tarotcards.com and the folks that won, when you get your tarot card, please give them an email and tell them that you appreciate it. And tell them at deadpit.com rules and to send more stuff to give away. So we'll do it. Dan Williams and Joey Davis are the winners of the Linnea tarot cards. So congratulations, fellas. And keep eating KFC.
That's right.
And watching Linnea Quigley flash her boobs.
And drinking liquor and smoking bong hits. And whatever it is.
Try to hide upon it.
Yeah. That's what y'all do. But we're going to take a real quick break. Before we do this next segment that's going to be during the break, is going to be something from Scott Goldberg, who is our resident independent horror filmmaker.
That's right.
And this is a segment where he's going to be talking about some of the pre-production and production for his new short film entitled The Forest Hills.
That's right. This is Inside the Forest Hills, only on deadpit.com.
Doc Over, director of All In for Christmas, The Day They Came Back, and the upcoming Forest Hills, and you're listening to Inside the Forest Hills on DeadPit.com. So here we are on the first week of shooting, and let me tell you a little bit about The Forest Hills to those who don't know. The Forest Hills is a short film, hopefully to be turned into a feature if investors want to pick it up. That's how it's independent filmmakers' role, I guess you could say. And Forest Hills is about two horror beat writers for their website, BloodyFrights.com, who travel to Prestonsfield, Kentucky. We were originally going to name it Prestonsburg, but they didn't want to, you know, get in trouble. So, basically, they go there, and it's about these this evil in the woods, I guess you could say. But I'm sure if people have checked out DeadPit.com message boards, they have seen the pictures. And so anyway, what it's about is these two crazy axe murderers, Samson and Mark Hunter, who were outcasts in the woods about 10 years earlier, and they took care of some murders, basically. They killed a bunch of college kids while they were going up to Florida on their spring break, you know, passing through Kentucky. So I had the idea in my head back in, I believe, April 2006 to make a short film. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew that, you know, All In for Christmas was coming to a close, and I was like, you know, I want to do something as my next project. So I was on the phone with Elaine Lampkin and Wes from DeadPit.com, and we were just talking. I was like, you know, I want to come out to Kentucky. And they're like, yeah, you should come out. I'm like, well, do you guys know any, you know, places that we could shoot? They're like, oh, there's plenty of places around here. So I was planning on going to Kentucky, you know, earlier, you know, back in, like, June, July, August. But, you know, I was doing a lot of pre-production, and I kind of actually held off the Forest Hills because I didn't feel it was the right time. You know, I was scheduled to start in June, but I didn't want to rush into it. And as an independent filmmaker, especially starting out, what you like to do is work on so many projects. But I decided to take my time, and a good friend of mine, Scott W. Perry, wrote the script. I actually wrote the story. I had given it to him, and he wrote the script. And then I rewrote it, like 2 months later, in June and July, for the actors in the location. So we're shooting at the same place as The Day They Came Back, the place called Welland Preserve. It's in Glen Cove, New York. And it's been exciting so far. I mean, out of the first 4 days, it's rained. Actually, we've been rained out, probably because of this upcoming Hurricane Ernesto, whatever it's called. You know, we're shooting, and we've shot basically in sequence. For those who don't know, in sequence means when you're shooting from the beginning to the end, and you're not really going, like, from the beginning to the end. Actually, we shot someone's death scene the first day, actually, and that was very interesting, especially noticing the weather changes and weather patterns throughout the sky. And, you know, I have a great group of talented actors and actresses. Peter Iacillo, who's in Skin Deep and Spooky, he's also played a zombie in Day of the Dead. We have Robert Youngren, who is in The Long Island Project. Gloria and Diana Sanders, who was in an independent film called Death Trap, I believe. And we have a bunch of other people. John T. Farley, who did a lot of special effects for my films. He actually played this masturbating, mentally challenged Kentuckian called Chalice, which is actually named after Dr. Chalice in Halloween 3. I'm a big Halloween 3 fan. People don't like that film because they say, oh, we know Michael Myers. But he is in the film. He's on the TV. And, anyway, you know, we have a bunch of other people who are working behind the scenes that have just been doing a great job. And so we're in the first week of shooting, and it should be a good shoot. I think the thing when you edit, especially when you're doing everything on your own, you're producing, when you're editing, when you're shooting, when you're directing, it kind of gets to a point, you know, it's fun, but while you're editing, you just hope you have every single thing down. Because I feel, I mean, especially when I edited yesterday, I felt, oh man, you know, I wish I had that shot, I wish I had this shot. And, you know, we had a shot list and everything. For those who don't know, of course, you know, a shot list is basically, you know, a list of all the shots. It's pretty self-explanatory. But, you know, it's just been it's been fun so far, and I'm looking forward to coming up to Kentucky to document some footage there, as well as Wes and Aaron's cameos for the film. And looking to do that sometime in late September, early October. And you know, I think it's great when everyone's helping each other out. You know, I'm just happy to be these guys' friends, and you know, and they're great guys. I think Wes and Aaron are great. So anyway, Forest Hills. It's the first week, and everything's going well. I guess if you want to keep up to date on the Forest Hills, if you want to check out some stuff, go to deadpit.com. There'll be some messages on the bulletin board in the independent filmmakers section. And stay scared. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Deadpit Radio. We hope you enjoyed the Scott Goldberg's Inside the Forest Hills. We'd like to thank him for doing that, though. And I know he's going to have some more segments in the near future. Isn't that right?
Yeah. He's actually going to have people from the production of the movie on, possibly. So you can look forward to that. I figured it would be an interesting inside look, if you will, independent filmmaking. And we want to do more of this in the future with other directors. So any other directors out there that would be interested, give us a call.
That's right. It's kind of like a little audio journal. Yeah. About, you know, all the things going on. So we're going to go ahead and get to the DVD reviews now. And we've got four movies this week. We're going to start off with I guess it's French or Belgium. I can't remember which.
I think it's French.
But it's called Calvaire. And it's much talked about right now as a sort of Texas Chainsaw Massacre misery type of...
It definitely is misery, yeah. You know, it's... I would definitely say that I was sort of impressed with this movie because I know you really didn't like it at all.
Well, I think that you talked to somebody who will remain nameless, but they said that it was like one of the best films of the year.
It's not that, but I thought it was.
So I was really hyped up about seeing it. But here's the basic story of it. A guy who is a traveling singer, he goes like and sings at these, you know, retirement homes
stuff.
And just different places like that, breaks down in this small little town. His van breaks down as he's going cross country, and he goes into this little inn, and a guy who is on the side of the road, he meets up with, and he takes him to this inn where this old man lives, and it's kind of a remote, deserted inn, but he takes him in, and you know, fixes him something to eat, and they get started talking, and he tells that he once had a wife who used to live with him. They used to run the inn. It was a pretty popular place, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so then over the course of, like, the next little while, you find out that there's some really weird backstory
behind going on.
Yeah,
in
and the whole town is kind of a little bit askew and messed up, and the guy running the inn is not, you know, who he appears to be, and he's a little bit disturbed. But
mentally ill.
Yeah, don't give too much of the movie away, because it basically is just completely centered around the relationship between the guy and the singer.
So. Along the lines of misery. The guy that's running the inn, he loses his mind more and more as the time passes, and you know, he actually thinks that the guy is his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And he dresses him accordingly.
A lot of stuff like Deliverance. It was talked about sort of like Deliverance. Some of the scenes.
I just thought the movie was way too freaking slow. There was nothing in it that was shocking enough that you haven't seen. And
I think
other film.
What I really liked in it, though, was I thought the camera work and the visuals and stuff was really, really good. I mean, I know they had an overhead shot towards the end of, like, but I'm not going to say exactly what happens, just chaos.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things coming to a head, I guess. I like that shot a lot. And they stole a shot directly from Texas Chainsaw, the dinner table.
I hated that, too, when I watched it, because it was just so obvious what that came from. There was nothing in the movie original enough to make me like it. I've seen all that stuff before in other movies.
I thought the camera work was really well. It was really good, you know. I thought that was probably the star of the movie.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Sam Raimi's Evil Dead movies, you will fucking, like, this is the Antichrist movie right there. Because it's nothing like that at all. It's like a slow, atmospheric kind of...
It's kind of like filmed like High Tension a little bit.
Yeah.
Looks like that. Has a lot of...
There's really not any gore in it either, which is another thing.
Has a lot of foggy elements, and a lot of the French countryside look and stuff.
I'll tell you people that probably like this. If you're a big fan of, like, Argento's early stuff, you would probably like it, because it's kind of that slow, atmospheric...
It is. The thing, that would turn people against it, definitely, is it's really, really slow to start. It's probably, a good 30 minutes before anything happens, horror-wise. They just sort of try to build you up. And the thing, too, is...
And you pretty much always know what's going to happen in the movie, though. It's not like there's any big surprises in it. I mean, you know when the guy gets to the inn, that the innkeeper is not very, what's the word?
Sane.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. So you pretty much know what's going to end up happening. You just don't know exactly how it's going to happen.
Yeah. I would slightly recommend this, though, actually. Palm Pictures is going to be releasing this October the 3rd. Okay, it's a long way off, but, you know, I think it's got an audience. It definitely will have an audience of people that will enjoy it.
I think people like John R. Hand that think they're artsier than they really are will love this movie.
Oh, shit, man. This movie is not like that, though.
I'm just saying that the people that are pseudo intellectuals that like to go around thinking that they know everything about films and shit will love this movie.
Well, it's one of those movies I felt that some of the parts of it will stay with you. You know, some of the scenes, I ain't going to say, but the bestiality scene in it that is pretty bizarre.
Now, you didn't need to say that. You just gave away the bestiality scene.
Well, I ain't going to tell. It's an odd animal for a bestiality scene, too. You would never think that, but anyway.
Yeah. I won't recommend it.
I'll slightly recommend it. I'll disagree with Uncle Bill for once.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Palm Studios. Another thing I want to mention about the movie, too, this actual screener that we got. I didn't like the screener, the way it was set up.
It's letterboxed, didn't it?
Yeah, and if you have a widescreen TV like we both do, I believe, that looks awful. and it's wide scope, too, which, you know.
One thing I was happy with was that they actually put the promotional use only thing in the bars instead of in the actual.
That's where they have to put it, really.
It always aggravates me when I have to look at that.
But
shit.
Yeah, I mean, they're deliberately doing that, probably trying to avoid.
Yeah.
You know, people transferring it on the computer and shit. So I can understand it.
So next up, I guess we'll do City of Rot, which is
Frank Sadal flick.
The first animated horror film we've ever done on this show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the first animated horror films I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too.
I think.
This is a zombie movie, actually, and
Unearthed Films is releasing it.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Sadal, what's really amazing about this movie is he is the entire show. Okay, he did everything. He did the voices, the animation, the direction, production, you know, the story itself. He did it all.
You got to give him credit because he actually does build an entire world.
Yeah.
And, you know, a whole zombie little world in there. And it starts off, the film starts off with an old man who's one of the few remaining survivors of this big zombie epidemic.
And this isn't it really far in the future, supposedly?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact date, but, yeah, it's far into the future. He's going around basically looking for a pair of slippers. Because I guess that's a stereotype that old people only go around looking for new slippers.
My slippers are old and I need them, man.
So he's risking his life going out among the zombies to find a new person. And he talks to his walker, which is another thing.
He calls it Walker.
Yeah. So basically, it's just him going into different sections of this city that are all overrun by zombies. And he meets up with like one or two different people and tries to help them. And they eventually end up, you know, either getting killed or not getting killed or helping him. But he bludgeons the zombies to death with his walker. That's his main, like, weapon.
I love the sound effects.
Yeah. Yeah, they are great. And, you know, the sound effects, too, when they're actually eating somebody. Which I'm pretty sure it's just somebody taking, like, a head of cabbage or something. That is the best part of the film is actually some of the creative ways that you can kill people.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
without having to use real people.
Other than what he said, there's really not a plot to the movie.
That's basically it.
You're just following a group of maybe, what, two or three humans,
mm-hmm.
and they all fall victim, pretty much, to the zombies.
And actually, the zombies in this, you know what they're caused by. They're caused by worms, these little, like, parasitic worms that eat your brain and then start talking to you and making you do things. So you actually, you have, like, an understanding of it.
And as I understand it, maybe I'm wrong on this, but it seems like I read that the movie was done in Flash, which is a computer program.
It definitely looks like unlike any animation I've ever seen. Yeah. I can say that.
Yeah.
It's not any kind of standard type of cartoon animation. It's not any kind of, you know, stop motion or anything like that either. It's just odd.
Yeah. You know, this is the first movie like this that I've ever seen, so it's sort of hard to review it. You definitely, if you're a zombie fan, you want to see this at least.
Here's the thing about it, though. If you're a zombie fan that likes gore, you probably won't like this movie because there's just something about seeing you know, the way that somebody puts together a makeup effect scene for real people and pulls it off, that you just, you know, you're watching a cartoon, basically, so you can't really get into that part of it.
But
it doesn't have a story at all, so you can't get into that part of it.
But the thing is, like, it's, I was just, you know, loving the look of the movie.
Yeah, you, it it's...
You get in that world, I guess.
For zombie, like you said, for zombie fans, it's kind of revolutionary, so you probably really want to see it.
Yeah. We've heard about it a while, I know. Yeah. You know. And Franks would also be really, really proud of this, actually, because doing the whole damn thing by itself, even the music, actually. I didn't mention that. He did the music.
It actually has some pretty good music in it. And if you're fans of, like, Japanese anime, I'd probably say you'd really like this movie, too.
Yeah.
Just because it's a completely different kind of animation.
But, yeah, this one is out now, actually. And, it has audio commentary with the director and the star Fred, which is also, you know, it's Frank Sadal, doing commentary with himself. So that'd be sort of interesting. I haven't listened to that. And you got two Frank Sadal movie zombie shorts in Psych and Rise Zombie, along with the City of Rot trailer, slideshow, and deleted scenes. And you can check this out. At unearthfilms.com.
Our new buddies at Unearth Films.
Yeah. Or I'm sure Amazon or Deep Discount probably have it. So I would recommend it definitely for zombie fans, fans of just weird stuff, you know, that's you don't see a lot.
It's animation fans and zombie fans is pretty much who I would recommend it for.
Yeah. City of Rot.
That's right.
Very interesting.
Next up is a film that's probably going to absolutely make it impossible for us to describe, because that's just the way these Asian horror films are. But this next film is called Old Boy.
Yeah.
And it's the second in the trilogy that was, you know, the Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Yeah. So, Old Boy is basically, like, this is the part that's going to be hard. Try to describe this.
You want me to try it?
Yeah, you go ahead.
There's a guy. What was the guy's name in the movie? Odae Su.
Yeah.
Okay. He is, from what I got of the beginning of the movie, he is a drunken businessman that just becomes crazy when he's drunk. And he is kidnapped and imprisoned by someone he doesn't know who they are, have any idea. Then, you know, they show, about 20 minutes of the movie is him in the room, looks like a hotel room where they're prison.
Trying to figure out, adjust to what's going on. I think they give him, like, a television. Yeah. And
they drug him.
Yeah, they drug him every day so they can give him a shower and take him out and stuff like that.
And, unexpectedly, 15 years later, he is released and given, you know, new clothes, and he also has phone calls from his cell phone, finds out that he has 5 days to find out who imprisoned him, the mystery behind all that and stuff. So, you know, it's just, that's basically it, you know, and without giving more of it away.
Yeah.
It's got a great ending, and it's got a surprising ending that I don't think anybody would guess.
Yeah, this is one of those movies where it's basically, it's not a horror movie at all, by the way. It's a complete, like, mystery and thriller movie. And
neither
it has
was
a couple,
Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance.
Yeah, and it has a couple of scenes of, like, violence in it, but nothing that graphic at all, really.
No.
It's one of those movies where it's all really style, and you know, the kind of visuals and stuff that I've only noticed that Asian filmmakers do anymore, really. And you can't really talk about the middle of the film without giving away the complete ending of the film, but needless to say, it's a lot more interesting than we could probably ever make it sound. And
that's
true. So, you know, you don't want to talk about that much about how it ends, but...
Yeah, because I don't think people would like that.
Yeah, I don't think they would either. But I would like to say that it will keep you guessing until the very end of the film, and when you do, you know, figure out what happens at the end of the film, you'll be completely surprised, at least I was.
Yeah, and I have to say that I really did enjoy the movie and all, but I really like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance better than Old Boy.
Yeah, and actually I did too, amazingly.
Yeah.
I don't think I even liked the first one as much as you did.
they're both interesting. You want to know how they're going to end and stuff like that. Yeah. They're both along the same line of film, but, you know, I just like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance a little bit better.
I'll tell you what, this movie, Connor, there's scenes in this movie that will absolutely remind you of the original Manchurian Candidate, because it's basically a film about brainwashing,
yeah,
is what it boils down to. And there's, like, certain scenes where they use triggers to make him think certain things, like, you know, I won't give away what those triggers are, but... Yeah. Needless to say, if you like films like that, like Manchurian Candidate, you'll like that film.
Yeah, and I can safely say that there's probably no way in hell anybody in the United States would touch this to remake it. I can guarantee you that. Just
no, the not at all. No.
You know, yeah, and stick with the surprise twist ending, at mm-hmm. least. It's not going to happen. But this is another great one from Tartan Asia Extreme. And, you know, I can't say enough good things about that company, because... Basically, every film we've reviewed on here has been pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's true. Theirs. It's just to a greater or lesser degree, but they've all been pretty good. Yeah.
That's right.
So that one is Old Boy. Check that out.
And that's available. That's been available for about a year, I think.
Yeah.
So here's one that's been at least a year and a half in the making,
mm-hmm.
for us, at least. This one is from Dante Tomaselli, who is highly regarded in the independent horror world, and it stars Felissa Rose, Alan Sandweiss, Ed Neal. This one is Satan's Playground.
Yeah, and we've, like you said, we've been waiting for this movie for a long, long time, since we heard that it was being made, really.
Yeah.
And it has a great cast in it, and I can't say enough about this film, horror.
Yeah.
Because I actually really understood what everybody was going on about him so much for after I watched that film. Because it's a great visual film, like in the style of Argento.
Yeah, and I think with this one, he had a lot of great visuals, but it really went a little bit beyond that. It actually had somewhat of a story.
He really tried to make a plot. And here's the problem with a plot. If you have a plot, you need to have actors that can carry it off. And unfortunately, I don't think Felissa Rose can carry a whole movie. And that's what she was basically asked to do.
Yeah.
I love Felissa Rose. I loved her in Sleepaway Camp. You know, she's been some good films and had a decent cameo in Zombiegeddon. But a whole film, I just didn't see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, she is the star of the movie. She's the lead. She's probably given the most dialogue of anybody in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought she did a pretty good job. I mean, considering what she had to do, and she really... You got to remember, I mean, she took how many years off from acting, really from a Sleepaway Camp, from that. So, and I know what you're saying. She was probably asked to do a little bit too much.
Well, she was asked to carry this entire film, like I said, and I don't think she could do it. You're talking about somebody that basically acted when she was like, what, 8?
No, I think she was in 8th grade.
Okay, whatever.
14.
So you're talking about somebody that basically acted when they were in, you know, 8th grade and then took off... I don't know how many ever years, you know, probably close to 20 years.
I'd say she's, what, probably in her mid-30s now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, she just returned. She had a cameo in horror, and that was her first movie back. That was 2002,
mm-hmm.
I think.
So, I understand, you know, I've always liked Felissa Rose, like I said, but it just didn't work for me. There were scenes in the movie where you can tell, like, if she is rusty, they kind of showed because she's not exactly, you know, up to par.
Now, actually, though, on the flip side, I thought Alan Sandweiss did a really good job.
I did too. That's the amazing thing, is because I wouldn't think that she would be able to be like a main character in a film either, but she actually pulled it off completely, which is, you know, how I could tell the difference.
Yeah, but aside from acting performances, I guess we should talk about the movie. It starts with the family, mm-hmm. where Felissa Rose and Alan Sandweiss are actually sisters. And I believe, maybe I'm wrong, that Alan Sandweiss is supposed to be the younger sister because she's the one that has the kid.
I suppose. They never really say who the younger sister is, do they?
Yeah, but like, okay, Felissa Rose's husband is like a 60-year-old guy. So
who in the hell cast this movie, by the way? The guy, yeah, Felissa Rose, she's not 110 fucking years old. She's only like in her mid-30s at most. And the guy that plays her husband, I swear he's got to be in his late 50s.
Well, he's got to be, yeah, at least.
You know.
But you know what, though, man, like, the world is not always like in the movies if you think about it. Like, I've seen guys that you would never think they would have a wife like that. But, you know, I agree with you a little bit, but, it, you know, the world's strange sometimes. I guess you could think like that.
That's deep.
You also had Danny Lopes, who was Felissa Rose's retarded 18-year-old son, which also leads me to believe that she's supposed to be the older sister.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And what's funny is Alan Sandweiss is 10 years, at least 10 years older than Felissa Rose. So,
you know, we never said a thing about what this movie's about.
Yeah. I know. We're getting to,
here we go.
Okay, Alan Sandweiss, Felissa Rose, and family. All the people we mentioned, Danny Lopes, and that old guy, Felissa Rose's dad.
Yeah, the old Soprano.
He looks like Felissa Rose's dad. They're on a cross-country journey, or just a little trip or whatever. And they're going through the New Jersey woods, which is where the Jersey Devil supposedly originated. And their car gets stuck in the mud or something. So the old guy goes off. And, you know, comes up to a house where a deranged family live.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to use the phone.
Imagine that.
So, you know, one by one, they all go in the house, and I ain't going to tell you what happens, but anyway.
I will. They die!
Yeah. And that part, it does sort of go back to the Jersey Devil, because Mrs. Leeds is the woman's name. The old woman played by Irma St. Paul, who was really creepy.
Yeah, I swear that woman looks just like, I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was either Suspiria, or the one with the witches. That was Suspiria, wasn't it? At the end of the film, yeah. Where she goes back and there's all the witches in the back. And there's one witch that looks exactly like that. They actually had made out of, like, modeling clay or something at the end of that movie that looks just like that woman.
You know that Irma St. Paul was actually in a movie that we watched not too long ago, The Oracle. She's in that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But anyway, yeah, that's
she did a great job.
Ass looking woman.
Yeah, she did a great job.
And she also has a little, like, mute daughter in the film. And it's creepier than hell looking as well, too.
Yeah, Christy Sanford is her name.
Yeah, she's supposed to be, like, a full-grown woman, I think. But she dresses like a child and has, like, pigtails and different stuff like that. And it's just, you're talking about the inhabitants of the house. There's all something wrong with them, too. And you got Ed Neal, who's the brother and her
who's
son.
Really not using the movie a lot. He didn't say a thing.
They pissed away Ed Neal's character completely. He's supposed to be mentally retarded, but he really doesn't even get a chance to show any retarded acting chops.
Anyway, though, Irma St. Paul, who is Mrs. Leeds, you know, as we said, Christy Sanford and Ed Neal are two of her children. And the 13th child was the Jersey Devil, supposedly, as the legend goes. So they worked the Jersey Devil thing in there a little bit. And I like how they did it. Like, it was like a really quick crane shot? As the devil was like a giant bird or something swooping down.
You always heard when it was coming, but you never really saw it except for what it did to the victims, you know. Which is actually a really cool scene in the film.
But yeah.
So as far as camera work goes, though, because basically the plot of it is you've seen this plot a million fucking times. Remember when Texas Chainsaw Massacre did it? You got a group of people that get stranded somewhere, go up to a house, and there's a bunch of crazy sons of bitches that live in the house.
Right.
All right, and one by one they have to fight these crazy people.
Crazy bitches.
Yeah. So, but the thing that makes it work in the way that it does work is basically all Dante Tomaselli.
Yeah.
It's all the camera work and the lighting and everything.
I do think the cast was pretty good. I mean, most of them. You know, Felissa Rose, she probably needs a little bit more experience, honestly. You know, for a larger role like that. Now, I thought Alan Sandweiss did a great job. And it's amazing. I think that's her first movie back.
That is amazing. This is true.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell it's called the Ellie Cornell disease. When you used to be a really good actor and you take like a really long period of time off and come back and do something, and then you're just not up to.
Well, think about
I call it ECD.
Well, But the people that he usually, Dante usually uses, you know, Danny Lopes, who surprisingly pulled that role off as much as anybody could.
He drooled like a maniac in that film.
And Irma St. Paul and Christy Samford, they did a really good job, honestly.
To me, the star of this film was Tomaselli. Granted that the Irma St. Paul was a creepy, you know, main villain type of role in the film and stuff, but I just think that the main star of the film was the atmosphere and the camera work. The rest of the stuff is just, you know, the rest of the stuff is kind of generic to me. It's basically been done 1,000 times.
Yeah. But Anchor Bay recently released this, and there's audio commentary with Dante Tomaselli, Satan's Playground behind the scenes, Dante Tomaselli and the Jersey Devil poster and steel gallery. And there's actually an Easter egg that I found on the movie. I don't know if you found it yet. Where they actually, you can look for it. I'm not going to tell you exactly where it's at because that ruins the fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find it. And it's basically a group of people one weekend went into the Pine Barrens, I believe, in New Jersey. And there's a guy that I guess people hire to tell the story of the Jersey Devil, and they're by a campfire and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty cool extra. It's like 15 minutes something. So you can look forward to that. And the DVD is priced pretty low everywhere you want to go. I mean, it's not over $14.95 anywhere.
Yeah.
So Anchor Bay did a really good job with it.
I will say this, that it's a lot better than most independent films that I get to see, and I would definitely rent it.
I would say buy it, because I'm definitely wanting to watch it again with commentary, I think. Anyway, you folks are going to come and see us tomorrow and Sunday at the Friday Night Film Fest, or I'll kill every one of you.
That's right. I mean, it's in Louisville. If you're anywhere near, you know, southern Ohio or Indiana or, you know, even northern Tennessee, you can make your way up to Louisville and support us, damn it.
That's right. Support Havre. And we want to have a damn film fest every year in Kentucky. Think how cool that'd be.
And, you know, like we said, check it all out at FrightNightFilmFest.com. And we will be there. We will talk Havre. We will have things to hand out. We will be selling things. So you gotta
selling a shirt, maybe.
Yeah. Be selling our souls.
Okay, so this is like over fucking 2.5 hours of dead pit radio, so, you know,
come
I'm,
by
I'm sorry.
Us. Come by, see how we're doing, say hi to us, say hi to us. We'll talk about holes, then we'll fuck you in the butt.
No, we won't do that. But anyway, until next week, when we will be reporting on how everything went, I am the Creep Kentucky.
I am a creep.
You've been listening to Dead Pits.
Dead Pits.